We're going to call the State Government Finance Committee to order. Members, in your packet, you have the February 14th minutes. And Representative Kunesh Podine, would you like to move those minutes?
So motion to accept the minutes from February 14th.
Representative Kunesh Podine moves the minutes for February 14th. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, the minutes are adopted. Members, we have a full schedule here today. We do have the availability of the room for quite some time, and we're going to maximize on that. But first, we're going to start off with State Auditor Otto to present her area. And what we're going to do is we're going to spend 10 minutes on your presentation, and then we're going to move to questions. So if State Auditor Otto could come up to the desk and please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Madam Chair, Rebecca Otto, the Minnesota State Auditor.
Welcome.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I have Matt Lindemann from the Office of the State Auditor as well, just
Welcome.
In case. Thank you. All right. So we'll do a brief overview of the Office of the State Auditor today. And you should have this in your materials. So the office oversees $20 billion spent per year by our local governments. And part of our job is to make sure there's transparency around that, the finances, and so we are the only entity in government that collects, reviews, publishes, and maintains long-term comprehensive financial data on our local governments. Now, we don't have it on the schools. That information goes to the Department of Education. Good morning. This information is used by the taxpayers, by you all and your researchers, the governor, the media, state agencies, and more. So we ensure that there's transparency and accountability for the taxpayers. So if somebody, for instance, Madam Chair, if you wanted to know more about the finances of the city of Plymouth, on our website, you would go under the tab Reports and Data, and Comparison Tools is at the very top of the menu, so any member can do this. And if you wanted to look up, let's say, one of your cities, you would select the city tab or the city link. And what we did is we pulled up the city of Plymouth, and it tells you the county. We have their calendar year 15 data and their calendar year 14 data, so you can compare if you'd like. You can compare the same entity for different years, or you can compare two different entities. And this just shows the revenues, but it has the revenues, expenditures, and debt, and it does some per capita analysis as well. It has your population and year. So we also make sure that there's accountability in the handling of the $20 billion per year spent by local governments. There is a mandatory reporting requirement. All local officials must report evidence of theft or misuse of public funds or assets. And also private CPA firms are required to report to our office any evidence of theft or misuse of public funds. And the taxpayers, we are the place the taxpayers can call, the only place, if there is an issue with their local government. So we, this office was created to be a deterrent for misuse or theft of public funds and assets. And there's many ways we do it. One way is we investigate whether there's been misuse of public funds. We work with law enforcement when they want our assistance and others when there's investigations being conducted. We train and educate local officials to prevent and detect fraud. And we are required to refer cases to county attorneys for possible criminal proceedings when that's appropriate. This is a view of an old summary report that we issued. We haven't had enough staff to do this again, but maybe we will someday. And so I just want you to know that through our work and investigations, we're very effective. County attorneys are able to actually charge if there are crimes committed, and they determine if there's crimes. Restitution occurs, and it happens all over the state. So you can see Coochiching Economic Development Authority, Winnebago Firemen's Relief Association, Norman County East Independent School District 2115, Aiken County Planning and Zoning, and St. Paul. We certify for the state cities to receive local government aid, and they can only receive it if they have followed through on certain financial things they have to do, such as audits and reporting to the office to make sure there's that accountability and transparency. It's an important source of revenue for many of your cities, most likely, except maybe Plymouth. And also our office, we work with just under 700 volunteer fire relief associations. So we support that volunteer system. And About $34 million in 2016 in aid went out to those reliefs. So we make sure that they had their audit conducted and or their agreed upon procedures engagement, that they fulfilled their annual reporting requirements in compliance with the law. And really, we're there to safeguard those service pensions for our volunteer firefighters and provide transparency. And we do support that efficient, effective system that we have in Minnesota. Some of you may be aware of tax increment financing. It's an economic development tool. Legislators tend to like it generally. It allows for housing, economic development, redevelopment, and more. You all have those laws on the books, and what we do is make sure that their tax increment revenue is being used in accordance with the laws. As it is in, you know, it's a gift, and so, but it does allow for some good things to happen in our communities around the state. So in 2015, approximately $194 million in tax increment was generated in our state, and development authorities returned about $25 million in increment revenue back to county auditors for redistribution through the property tax system. We're there to make sure that happens when it's supposed to, and about 64% of the TIF districts are located in greater Minnesota. This is kind of a fun fact. We conduct annual financial and compliance audits, including the single audit for the federal government. Why do you audit financial statements? If a local government wants to issue bonds, they have to have their audits conducted on behalf of the bondholders. So taxpayers look at audited financial statements, bondholders, rating agencies, governing bodies, and more. Single audits are used by the federal departments and state departments for consideration when awarding grants and funds to local governments. Budget. So of our expenditures, this is for fiscal year 18-19, our base budget, almost 90% of our money goes towards people. So we're extraordinarily efficient, and our operating expenses are very, very low. But we're efficient, and that's our job. So our office is people. So this slide I have to clarify for you. It says OSA overhead expense. It's actually our audit division. So I'm comparing our audit division to private sector audit firms. And our overhead expense for audit division as a percent of revenues is at 13.5%. The average for private firms is 20 to 25. For our audit practice division, administrative personnel as a percent of total headcount is 6%. 20% is considered good for a number for private firms. So we're extraordinarily efficient. Our audit practice division overhead expenses per person is at $6,643. $35,000 to $40,000 is considered a good number for private firms. So I'm simply sharing this with you because I think it's really important to understand the extraordinary service we provide to the state of Minnesota and to the citizens. We're very efficient. We have no profit motive. We have very, very, very low overhead costs. So where does the money go? 73% of our budget is the audit practice division. And then all the other divisions are quite small, as you can see, in terms of where the money goes. Something that might be a little bit different than some different agencies or offices that come before you is that the law requires that we recover quite a bit of our appropriation through fees and reimbursements. So that's that. So that big purple chunk is the revenue or cost recovery. So we don't cost the general fund. We're very, very small. So for our base budget by division, this is in thousands, just to note. The audit practice division, you'll see a small number there because it's not the enterprise fund. But it's pretty self-explanatory. So for the biennium, the appropriation is $4.5 million roughly. So we have two proposed change items for fiscal year 18-19. One of them is staff retention, and one is technology staffing. So the staff retention change item for the biennium costs $154,000, and the technology staffing position is $212,000 for the biennium. The staff retention, all that allows us to do is keep the staff that we have to conduct the work that we're required to do by statute. And the technology staffing would be something that would really provide us, it would probably move us 5 years forward in terms of just some of the efficiencies we could build in for the over 4,000 units of local government and others that are required to port to our office. It would also help us to continue to improve efficiency within the office with some built-in analysis as we review a lot of financial information. Another way to look at our proposed budget is this, I think, is a nice bar graph. The audit division is the really big bar, and anything that's dark blue, that's recovered through fees and reimbursements. So as you can see, again, we don't have a very large impact on the state's general fund, and that's the way the legislature has chosen to fund the office. We have highly trained, sought-after, specialized staff. That staff retention change item allows us to maintain our current staff. And as I said, the technology position would help us improve processes and systems used to report to us, simplifying reporting forms for over 4,000 units of local government reporting to us, and increase efficiency for our staff. And improve transparency. Our website is 8 years old, and we've had tight staffing for a very long time. So I'm asking because it's important, but it's up to you as to what you do. And then there's the contact information for the office, and I'm done.
Thank you, Madam Auditor. Members, we've got Representative Nash has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Auditor Otto. It's a mouthful for me, sorry. Welcome to the committee. A question for you. Can you help me understand what the difference is between the general fund appropriations and what you call your constitutional office division?
Madam Auditor.
Madam Chair, I think I'm going to have Matt Lindemann answer that since he's the budget and finance person in our office.
Mr. Lindemann, if you could introduce yourself to the committee and who you represent.
My name is Matthew Lindemann. I'm the Director of Budget, Finance, and Technology for the Office of the State Auditor. Madam Chair, Representative Nash, the Constitutional Office is part of our general fund appropriation.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, and Auditor Otto, the reason for my question is some things have happened between the legislature and your office in the last couple of years, and there was a decision to allow counties to, you called it, use private sector audit firms, and there's a little bit of a disagreement, and there's a lawsuit as a result of that. Mm-hmm. And the question that I have is, you're utilizing funds, I believe, out of what you're calling the Constitutional Office Division, mm-hmm. and I just want to make sure that that's an appropriated amount of money that comes out of the general fund and goes straight into that. Is that correct?
Madam Auditor.
And Matt, you can shake your head if I'm not getting this right, but Madam Chair, Representative Nash, yes, that's part of a general fund appropriation.
Representative Nash?
I'm good for now. I know we have other members to ask questions.
So talk to me. I got your response back to the letter that Senator Kiffmeyer and I sent to you. And in the response on the transfers internally, you've noted that you don't have any transfers. But when I actually look at your budget, you've got a transfer from one segment of your budget into your constitutional office piece. So can you tell me why that wasn't reflected in the response in the letter? And then what are you doing with the transfer? What was the need for the transfer and so forth?
So, Madam Chair, Matt Lindemann created that, so I'd like to have him answer that.
Mr. Lindemann.
Madam Chair, my understanding was we wanted transfers between appropriations. So the state auditor receives one appropriation, so there were transfers from other divisions up to the Constitutional Office Division, but there were no transfers between appropriations.
Well, can you, Madam Auditor, what was the reason for the transfer from the Government Information Division to your constitutional office? What was the purpose for that?
Madam Chair, members, so as a constitutional officer, I have a staff that I am required to manage. I am required to come and, you know, let you know what we need in order to get our work done that's required by statute. Within my authority, I have the authority to manage funds and make sure we get our work done. So sometimes you'll have unexpected things that'll happen that none of us can anticipate. And so I have the authority to transfer funds amongst divisions as needed. There's a process for it. There's documentation for it. The legislative auditor who audits us will review those types of things to make sure that we're in compliance with state policy.
And, Madam Auditor, what was the transfer used for?
Legal expenses.
Okay, so that was for the lawsuit?
Yes.
So you took the money from the Government Information Division to your constitutional office to pay for the lawsuit?
Madam Chair,
Lindemann.
The transfers were from several different divisions, not just the Government Information Division, if I remember correctly, but one of the divisions that we transferred money from to the Consular Office Division was from the Government Information Division.
And Mr. Lindemann, how much was transferred then from the other to pay for the lawsuit?
Madam Chair, I don't know the exact number, but it was approximately the amount of what we've expended for the lawsuit. It's a little bit less than that, but it's approximately that amount.
And Mr. Lindemann, how many FTEs would that equate to for your office on average?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure at this point with the numbers. I would have to look at the positions that we're talking about and do a calculation. So it depends on what level of position we're talking about and exactly what the numbers were. I don't have the exact numbers for each bienniums or, for each fiscal year, so I'd have to look at that.
And, Madam Auditor, so when you did those transfers, then what changed for those different divisions? How did they make up for the loss in revenue?
Madam Chair, I'm so happy that you asked that question. I was hoping for that question. So, as you know, I've provided you with all of the invoices from the law firm. I've also released all of those to the media to be extraordinarily transparent. We make transfers since I've been in. This is my third term. And making division transfers happens. There's a process for it that has to be documented. We do that. So this isn't the first time transfers have occurred between divisions to make sure that we complete our work on behalf of the people. And in order to make sure that I can carry out my duty and honor my oath of office to defend the Constitution and be there for the people that elected me, we have had to scrimp and save to make sure that we can go to the courts, which is part of our government. It's one of the branches of government, to help us interpret a law, which is their job. They're one of the three branches of government in our Constitution. And so there are times when you have salary savings that are unexpected. So we have some salary savings. How does that happen? Well, that can be when somebody leaves unexpectedly and going through the state system, you know, trying to hire somebody new, you might have savings there. And then everyone else has to work harder. So you can also make sacrifices in terms of what you do or don't do. I'm not going to get into personnel matters, but just know that it's my job to manage that budget. We know who we need in order to get the work done. There are times when you may have gaps between people, and there may be expenditures that you just don't make. So that's how we've managed it, and I have an oath that I have to honor, and so I've gone to the courts to interpret an institutional disagreement.
And, Madam Auditor, you said that you know what you need within your budget. Mm-hmm. So are you saying that you don't need that money for your budget?
Oh, I absolutely do, Madam Chair, and which is another really good question. So we
before you get into that, though, I would like you to answer the original question that I asked you. So what changes did those divisions that had to funnel money towards the lawsuit, what didn't get done because they had to use that money to go towards the lawsuit?
They've gotten everything done, Madam Chair.
So you're saying that they don't really need the money then?
Madam Chair, salary savings can occur. Let's say that somebody retires and you need to fill that position. In the state system, it takes time. It's one of the slower parts of government. It's a little bit frustrating. You also have to find someone who's qualified to do the work. So you may have a gap in between when someone's left and you get your new person in. That's called salary savings. You also may be aware that since this is my 10th year of being the state auditor, I'm in my 11th year now, that we've actually been able to cancel money back to the state's general fund at the end of a biennium. We're extraordinarily conservative fiscally, and if we have those salary savings, we have money left over, we don't race to spend it at the end, we return to the state. There might not be a large cancel back or even a small one this time around because I have to make sure that I carry out my duty on behalf of the people of the state and the protections that are guaranteed in the Constitution. So I'm simply doing the job to the best of my ability, which I said when I put my hand on a Bible when I took my oath.
And so, Madam Auditor, how many positions did you leave open to achieve the salary savings to fund this suit? And was it all salary savings, or did you take operating programming money to pay for the lawsuit as well?
Madam Chair, we're living within the appropriation that we were given, and that's what we have to do every biennium that I've been the state auditor. And when there's been unallotments, when Governor Plenty was in office, when we had budget deficits, everybody did their part and worked as hard as they could to try to trim. We've trimmed and skimped for so long. I don't have an executive assistant. I forego So I've forgone help that I'm entitled to make sure that all hands are on deck to serve the people of Minnesota. But we didn't forego and not do anything. The staff worked extraordinarily hard while we have gaps, and it's not gaps that I plan. If somebody retires early, somebody passes away, those things happen and you can't predict, and then you've got that gap of time. It happens throughout government. And then what you do is people work really hard to make sure we get the work done. And if the people of Minnesota are not satisfied with me being able to get the work done, or they're not happy with the quality of the work, then they can unelect me. People of Minnesota elected me again. This is my third term. They're happy with the work that I've been able to accomplish on their behalf.
Madam Auditor, in December, Senator Kiffmeyer and I had sent you a letter. We sent it to all the agencies requesting that you provide a list of the open positions or unfilled positions within your agency or in your office, your constitutional office. You have not provided an answer to that. I'm asking you directly right now, how many positions did you keep open in order to take that savings to fund the lawsuit?
Madam Chair, I didn't keep any positions open.
And so how did you achieve the salary savings? You're saying that it was early retirement. That means that you left that position open to take the savings from that. Otherwise, you can't achieve the salary savings. So with the salary savings, you're saying somebody retired and you didn't fill the position right away, and then you took that money to pay for the lawsuit. So can you tell me how many positions did you keep open?
Madam Chair, I understand that you're frustrated. My job is to run that office, get the work done, make sure that the numbers add up. I serve on six state boards. There's an extraordinary staff in that office.
Madam Auditor, I'm going to ask one more time.
Yeah.
How many positions did you keep open? If you use salary savings, which you said earlier, that's what you used. And just so you know,
unexpected salary
it's
savings,
our
Chair.
Responsibility to actually oversee your budget. We're the ones that put it together as part of the State Government Finance Committee. So I'm just asking, how many positions did you leave open for how long to achieve the salary savings that you said you used to pay for the lawsuit?
Madam Chair, I held no positions open.
So how did you get salary savings in order to pay for the lawsuit?
They happen naturally.
Madam Auditor, that means that you kept a position open.
No, you worked to
get
the position,
salary
Madam
savings.
Chair. Madam Chair,
Mr.
I'm sorry.
Lindemann, perhaps you can help us out. Can you tell us how many positions were left open for how long to achieve the salary savings that Madam Auditor said that's where she got her savings to pay for the lawsuit?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure how many positions, how much salary savings, what positions accounted for the salary savings. I guess when the letter came, I was not aware of the, you were asking for that question. I'm the one that prepared the answers for the spreadsheet, so I wasn't aware that you're looking for that information. I don't have that specific information available.
Mr. Lindemann, if you could get that information to us, review the letter again. My staff is happy to provide you with the letter again so that you can see that piece, and we'd love to have that information, and I'll share it with the rest of the committee as well.
Madam Chair, the other thing to consider, too, is that it's not just salary savings. I mean, we watch our expenditures in many areas, so it's partly salary savings that would attribute to the funds we use to pay for legal fees.
And, Mr. Lindemann, can you tell me what the other savings were that were used to achieve the amount that was needed for the lawsuit?
Madam Chair, it's really difficult to say exactly. I mean, I don't know if I would find it, that would be a very easy question to answer. I mean, we know we have certain areas that we spend expenditures on. We look for ways to not spend as much. Those are the savings. So I'm not sure exactly how to answer that question.
Well, I think it would be helpful. Obviously, you knew where to go in order to get the money that you needed to pay for the lawsuit. So my question to you is, can you give us a line by line? And you don't, I'm not asking for it right now, but I'd like you to go back to your office, Madam Auditor, Mr. Lindemann, and tell us where exactly that money came from and what was used to make that determination that this area, would they don't need that full amount and we're going to use it towards the lawsuit. So if you can provide that data, that would be great. I've got a couple other members on the list here. I'm going to go to with Representative Ugel first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Auditor, I just have a relatively simple question. Of course, you're suing the state here over these issues about the counties, and you're doing the audits and things. Why is it when you're asked to bid by a certain county on business, which could help you greatly, that you fail to bid?
Madam Auditor.
Thank you, Representative Uglum, for that question, and I hope I pronounced your name properly.
Close enough.
Uglum?
Uglum,
okay, I'm sorry. So the way the legislature has funded this office and county audits goes back to the beginning, and that is that we've always been required to charge for the recover the cost of the services. And so until you've delivered those services, you don't know the exact cost. Generally, when you are bidding or doing an RFP, you're going to give a fixed cost bid. The legislature has not structured this office, and you're the finance committee, so you're probably interested in hearing this. We're not structured that way. It would be easy to fix. There's a couple things you could probably do if you wanted to tweak policy around that. And, you know, one thing would be is if there's really a concern in terms of costs for the counties, you could give us a straight general fund appropriation and then take out the requirement that we're required to recover the costs. And that would be one way to do it, and then counties wouldn't have to pay for their audits. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that in terms of a total coverage of the cost, because when the counties, they can have a huge influence on how much their audits cost in terms of the quality of the work they prepare for us to audit, being prepared on time so that we can just go in and get the work done. And so they should have some skin in the game. But it is the way that we are currently structured by the legislature, not by choice on our part, but by, you know, it's just a decision that's been made over time by the legislature.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Madam Auditor, I'm looking at, for instance, the case of St. Louis County. You've done audits for them for many, many, many years. And of course, you know their wants and needs and everything else. Mm-hmm. They went with a private CPA firm, evidently saved quite a bit of money. They requested a quote from your division, from your constitutional office. They never received one. Mm-hmm. How do you expect to do business when you can't even provide a quote?
Madam Auditor.
Madam Chair, Representative Uglum. So that law that you're referring to around them being able to choose who audits them is currently in litigation. There's some confusion around what the law means, and so we are in the courts. And the job of the judicial branch is to interpret laws, and so we're hoping that that process can play out. And so it's complicated right now. So I don't know if that answers your question. We're waiting for interpretation. They're not working with a private firm right now. It would be for their next audit. We're conducting their audit for this calendar year.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think that it would be prudent from a business standpoint for you to prepare to be able to compete in a private marketplace, which means RFPs, which means, you know, being able to quote individual counties for your services versus the private sector and CPAs. You're going to have to compete. At least you better be laying the groundwork for that in the future, or you'd be very remiss. You might end up with no business. Thank you.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Auditor and Mr. Lindemann, I was intrigued when you talked about that you've historically had, I think you called it a chargeback over the years. You return money back to the general fund when you're not, at the end of the biennium. Mm-hmm. Give us last four biennium worth of chargeback. What did you have? Or if you just remember it, it could be round numbers, right up till the point where you filed the lawsuit, because I'm guessing that there wasn't money returned back to the general fund.
Madam Auditor.
Representative Nash, it's called canceled. We cancel it.
Cancel back. Okay.
Yeah, cancel back.
Cancel
so
back.
If there's any money left over, and I don't think we have the numbers here, and I wouldn't know, what did you say, the past four bienniums?
Maybe the biennium before the lawsuit.
We've been able, Madam Chair, Representative Nash, we've been able to cancel money back to the general fund. handful of years ago in front of this committee, there was a member who had said he'd worked at the federal level, and whenever it came to the end of their budget, they'd race to spend every penny. We've never done that as an office. We've always worked to scrimp because I know every penny is important because it's taxpayer money. And so I cut out a lot of things that the previous state auditor used to do that I didn't think really had a public purpose. We don't have a state fair booth. I don't make bulldog fans for people to, you know, hand out. I don't think there's a public purpose. So I've cut back on many, many things over time. And I think our budget today is the size that it was when Judy Detcher was auditor, which was a very, very long time ago. So we're a very, very efficient operation. But in terms of money getting canceling back to the state's general fund, I'm sure we can get the history for you if you'd like, or maybe nonpartisan fiscal staff. Helen Roberts probably has the ability to find that as well.
Representative Nash.
Well, Madam Chair, and thank you, Madam Auditor. I mean, you were just a minute ago touting how wonderful a job that you had done previously and had these cancel backs, and I'm sure you had at least a couple come to mind if you wanted to talk about them. And you know, I'm just curious as to what those numbers were. Are we talking tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, a couple of bucks here and there? You know, my question is, leading up to the point where you decided to launch this lawsuit, there were these chargebacks ostensibly, and I'm guessing that there weren't any this last biennium, and I think you just said that there won't be any coming from the last biennium. What were they, and why not this biennium?
Madam Auditor?
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, I don't know what will happen at the end of the biennium. I can't tell you quite yet. And I don't have the numbers for the previous, but I'd be happy to get that to you. We can get that to you. It's in, I'm sure, Helen Roberts. I don't know if she has that, but you'd have to ask her.
Representative Nash?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Auditor, I got a question. There was a law passed that would allow counties to seek their own private audits if they wished. How many audits did you do before the law was passed, and how many counties did you lose after it was passed?
Madam Auditor.
Madam Chair, Representative Green, so the law... we're still auditing the counties that we told we were going to audit. They have not gone out to private firms yet, so it hasn't changed.
So nothing has changed?
Representative
Madam
Green.
Chair, nothing has changed?
Madam Auditor?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, no.
Madam Chair,
Green.
Why the lawsuit?
Madam Auditor?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, because my job when I took my oath was to defend the Minnesota Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, and to carry out the promises to the people guaranteed in our Constitution. Part of that is an independent watchdog on their behalf that they get to choose. And the law in question is currently in the courts. My general counsel is here to make sure I don't say anything I'm not supposed to. The courts really don't want us talking about this, so I have to be very careful with what I say or don't say. But what I can say is this law that was passed in 2015 is currently in litigation. And I wanted to also let you know that we all have our oral argument date set for March 9th at 11 o'clock in the Court of Appeals. And so it's currently playing out in the judicial system, and we look forward to a response from them in terms of if the law was unconstitutional. But it's for the 2017 audits, which will be conducted in 2018.
Representative Green.
Madam Chair, can you tell me how you picked the three counties to be involved in this?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, no.
Representative Green.
Okay. I'm a little disturbed at this, I guess. We'll have to wait and see what happens. But from what I understand, this already was ruled on once, and now there's an appeal filed. Mm-hmm. And my concern is that... you know, we're hearing a lot of talk about how we want to save money, and yet this is costing counties, including one of my own, a great deal of money, and for following the law. So, Madam Chair, I guess I won't get an answer to my question. So.
Okay. Madam Auditor, what do you mean that you can't tell us why you chose those three counties?
Madam Chair, I'm going to have my general counsel answer that question because this issue is currently in litigation. The courts do not want us discussing it. So,
okay. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Good afternoon, Chair Anderson. My name is Ramona Advani. I'm the general counsel for the Office of the State Auditor.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair.
You heard the question.
Yes, the question was, why can't we answer the question as to why these three counties? Why these three counties? Well, I can tell you that the defendants in a case like this, where the constitutionality of a law is being challenged, have to be parties that have availed themselves of this law and that have, by doing so, availed themselves of the benefits of this potentially unconstitutional law. So they're proper parties. There were motions to dismiss that were filed at the lower court level, all of which were denied by the district court. So there isn't really any question about these parties being proper parties to the lawsuit. In terms of why we can't talk about the selection of these particular counties, well, I can tell you that they are representative of the counties that would avail themselves of this law if it stands. Beyond that, I think the hesitation is that we don't want to get into anything that could be considered litigation strategy for reasons that you probably all are familiar with. But if you're not, there are legal doctrines around work product protection, attorney-client privilege that can be implicated when you start talking about strategy.
Well, looking at this, and Madam Auditor, I mean, you had 44 counties that availed them of the new statute that was passed with bipartisan support and signed into law by Governor Dayton. So you had 44 other counties. I'm just curious as to why those three counties and not the other 41 counties on a total of 44. Why not all the counties? Why did you choose just to pick out three from the list of 44?
Madam Chair, it's the answer that she just gave. We really can't discuss that, and we want to respect the process of it being in the judicial branch currently.
Okay. I do have a question for you, though. So I pulled the list of the transfers here, and you've got about 100,000. If you have a cell phone on, if you can put that away in your bag or anybody else, thank you. Madam Auditor, I'm just looking. You've got about $100,000 that was transferred from your pension division to your constitutional office. Can you tell me if that was used towards the lawsuit?
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay. Madam Auditor?
Madam Chair, yes. It's my job to manage the office, manage it within the appropriation we're given. There are unexpecteds that occur in any, whether you're in business or in government. It happens, and so I'm extraordinarily fiscally conservative and frugal and have been able to live within a very, very tight budget for a long time and have done without myself in order to make sure that we are serving the interests of the people. And we have very dedicated staff in the office who serve the public. And, yes, I have been transparent. There's no secret and there's no scandal. I've been very transparent about the money that we have expended on behalf of the taxpayers of the state that are guaranteed in the Constitution this very basic fundamental protection of their money that government takes when they are taxed. And, Madam Chair, I have a duty to serve the people of Minnesota. I ran on accountable, transparent government. I put my hand in a Bible, and I took an oath. I am fulfilling my oath, and I ask that we respect the judicial branch and their job in terms of being in our Constitution and providing a function to interpret a statute that right now there's some controversy around. It's their job to interpret those statutes.
Okay.
I don't know that any of you ran on making government less accountable or less transparent. My guess is you ran on it being more. This function has been around since the beginning of statehood. When our founders wrote our Constitution, this is an office that they wrote in with the governor, the attorney general, the secretary of state, and the state treasurer. The people get to choose who provides this protection on their behalf. And someone who's very good at history told me that the founders wrote our Constitution based on mistrust. They didn't want power concentrated in any one individual. They didn't want kings or queens. They wanted a government where there was separation of powers, there were three distinct branches, and that the people's interests were always protected. And our Constitution is the very limited power that the people grant those that serve in government. We are there to protect their best interests when it comes to their money. And I will do all I have to and stay within the law to make sure that I carry out my duty. And I can tell you, I'm accountable to the taxpayers of the state. When I was at the feed store and the guy was throwing a 100-pound bag of feed into the back of my car, he said to me, "You're the state auditor, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "Keep fighting that thing." He was very angry. I was at a gas station. And a person said, "You're the state auditor, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, and this is statewide." And they said, "Fight that thing." And I won't use some of the salty language that I've heard as well. So I've heard statewide. I had a farmer call me one day in the middle of the day, and he said, "You know, I live out western Minnesota. You don't know me from Adam, but that law is wrong. We don't want the fox guarding the hen house." And he said, "Keep fighting it." I get this statewide. So I will carry out my duty as I swore that I would and that I ran on, because I answer to the people of Minnesota at the end of the day in terms of the job that I've done and what their expectations are and the protections that they are guaranteed.
Madam Auditor, when I look at the governor's budget information, and you're responsible for monitoring 700 local public pension plans with assets over $546 million and membership of nearly 20,000. Mm-hmm. So what part of the pension division was $100,000 deemed not necessary?
Madam Chair, I don't understand your question.
So you took $100,000 from the pension division to pay for your lawsuit. So what can you tell me that wasn't needed in your pension division that could go towards the lawsuit, given that you are responsible for overseeing 700 local public pension plans?
Madam Chair, we did everything that we needed to do.
And Madam Auditor, so what part of the pension plans did you feel that wasn't necessary?
Madam Chair, everything is necessary, and we get our work done.
And so, Madam Auditor, with you saying that everything is necessary, what part of the $100,000 did you take from the public pension plan then? What was deemed not necessary and could go towards the lawsuit?
Madam Chair, there was no money taken from public pension plans.
Actually, you just said there was, and there is the transfer out here. So you said that there was. You used it towards the lawsuit. So can you tell me what was sacrificed because of that?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I think that you said money taken from public pension plans. We don't have any pension money within the office.
The division.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. So, yes, from the division. Yes, there was a transfer. We make transfers since I've been in office over and over to manage our budget within the appropriation we're given. Sometimes there's an unexpected cost in another division, and you might have a savings in a different division. It's my job as the state auditor to manage within my budget to get the work done on behalf of the people, and that's what I do. And the legislative auditor is there to make sure we followed all the laws and that we've followed state policy in all the work that we carry out. That's his job.
And Madam Auditor, so was there a savings, or was it that you needed the money and you just took it from the pension? And if that's the case, from the pension division, what did they forego because the money was sent to the Constitution office?
Madam Chair, nothing.
So you wouldn't have a problem if we were to cut $100,000 sent from your budget?
Madam Chair, yes, it would be a problem. So what I've done, as I'm required, is to communicate to the committee what we need in order to get the work done on behalf of the people. If we ever have savings because we scrimp, and I think that's a really good thing, then it goes back to the state general fund. Can we do that every time? Absolutely not. But we try. If we can, and if it's there, that's what we do. But our job is to carry out this work, and that's what we do. And at the end of the day, my duty is to the people of Minnesota. And we've cut and scrimped and cut and scrimped, and it gets really difficult to do. So I'm here today to provide you with what we need in order to get our work done. And if there's any savings from that at the end of that biennium, if you were to grant us the staff retention change item as well as the IT person, which we've asked for before and not gotten, you know, we will live within whatever we receive and work to get that work done. But this is what we need, and the way the state system is structured is we have to determine how many people we need in different places in order to get our work completed. Does it always work out that way? No. Do sometimes people do two jobs for a little while? Yes. Is it sustainable? No. So I'm here today to let you know what it is we need. And that's it, to carry out the work that we're required to in law.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mrs. Otto, I was looking at your budget. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I was looking at your budget and your proposed fiscal year 2018-19 change items. I think on page 21, staff retention, $154,000. Technology staffing, $212,000. That equals $366,000. Could you say if there was no expenditure for lawsuits that that amount would be reduced?
Madam
because
Officer.
Of the savings of, if there was no lawsuit, spending on lawsuit, would that amount be reduced then?
Oh, Madam Auditor.
Madam Chair, thank you for the question, Representative Detmer. No, it doesn't really have anything to do with that. So staff retention is in order just to keep the staff that we have, and so that takes into account increased pay, contracts, and things like that. So it's just to maintain the staff that we have, and it won't grant us any more staff. Technology staffing is just letting you know that we could go leaps and bounds about 5 years in efficiency for both all the local governments who report to us and for our staff. That's discretionary in terms of what you're going to do. But right now, for this biennium, we're living within the appropriation we've been given. And so we are working from a base budget for the next biennium, which you see in that first line for base budget, $4.5 million. The change items are reflected in terms of what we're requesting. And then you have the total general fund appropriation if both were granted for the next biennium. But we always go back to, you know, a base budget. And Matt, I don't know if I've missed anything, if you have anything to add.
Mr. Lindemann?
Madam Chair, Representative, when preparing the budget, you have to prepare it with the idea that all positions are fully funded. Otherwise, if we were to try to fill a position and we don't have an appropriation to cover that, we won't be able to fill the position. So, so what we're presenting here is what it takes to fully fund our office for all the positions that we currently have. And, you know, if we were lucky enough, maybe we wouldn't have any salary savings in a particular biennium, and then we would come out with no extra funds to cancel back to the general fund.
Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair, and what I saw here is that, you know, you've spent almost $252,000. Now, that money, if that wasn't spent, would you be requesting more money from the legislature?
Mr. Lindemann.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, we would, because we need to have enough, an appropriation that covers all positions that we intend to fill. So, you know, our objective is always we're working to fill all positions, and if we don't have the appropriation to fund that position, we wouldn't be able to fill it. We wouldn't be allowed to fill it.
Thank you. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Madam Auditor. You said something just a second ago that kind of gave me a little nostalgia wave. You said that you personally did without in order to make the budget work. And I think back to college and the inordinate amount of ramen noodles that I ate. Can you tell us what it is that you did without in order to make the budget work? Because you said that you personally have done without, and I'm guessing that you have directed your staff to also do without. What have you done? What have you done without?
Madam Honor.
Madam Chair and Representative Nash, I haven't had an executive assistant. I had one for part of my first term, and I got rid of him. I got rid of her. I have the position in law. It's not filled. I know you all have a legislative assistant. I don't. I don't have an executive assistant, and I'm a constitutional officer. I don't have people chasing around with me. Matt's here today to help with the budgetary information. My general counsel's here because of litigation. We have a very conservative staff. We serve a very conservative function. There's no waste. And so everything we do has a public purpose. But we have one person answering the phone. We still have one person answering the phone, which is nice because we have a lot of folks calling us because other government doesn't have it anymore, so they call and try to get help from us, especially senior citizens. But we don't have Westlaw in the office. There's a subscription that you pay for that. We have attorneys in the office. We do a lot of work with legal compliance. So we walk over to the courts building, and they have a library there where you can access Westlaw. So there's you know, decisions that you make. Obviously, that all of our staff have to have functioning computers. We have to have a functioning server room. We have to have appropriate, you know, security. You can come in and look at our threadboard carpet. You can come in and look at the furniture that we got from the AG's office before I was even there. So we scrimp to make sure that all. I also never. I reduced our office by one deputy state auditor. When I came in, the other auditor had three. I have two. There used to be a state fair booth. $7,000 was the expenditure on the previous state auditor, and they made little bulldog fans for people to take. That's gone. I said, we're not going to spend that money. I don't think there's any public purpose. People can find us on the Internet. So we've got a website. So there's ways that you can cut back. But, you know, my staff, we have to buy our own appliances so we can eat lunch at the office because we're all pretty frugal and fiscally conservative. We buy our microwaves with our own money. We buy the fridge with our own money. We buy so anything because we're under the highest level of scrutiny. So that stuff we'd never purchase anyway. But there are decisions that you make, like me not filling my executive assistant position, like me not having another deputy state auditor. And so within what we have, we get our work done. And the deputy, I just chose not to fill, and it was during, there were budget deficits at that time. And Governor Pawlenty said, he said, can independent offices and state agencies give something back? So he could direct his agencies that we offered as an office. And so it has consequences. So I commend the staff for the work they do. We've worked to build in efficiencies wherever we can, whenever we can technologically, which I think you would appreciate, right? And you leverage technology wherever you're able to. And we have a tiny, tiny IT staff. I know you're always interested in IT. And we have a wish list every year from each division in terms of where else can we build in efficiency, especially for the over 4,000 units of local government that report to us. So we build it in as we have time, as we have resources, and there's always things we don't get done. So that's why I was asking for the technology staffing, just one person, because we could probably move things about 5 years if we had one more person to help with programming, but we don't. But just to make you aware so that you understand, as we provide this service to Minnesotans and we work with all these local governments, we know we could build in some efficiency for them and that would really be positive. But again, it's you all have to decide what you can handle for state budget. That's what you're charged with.
Representative.
And Madam Chair and Madam Auditor, I understand that there were things that predated the lawsuit that you were still not doing without. You're still doing without. I'm asking, what have you done without as a result of your choosing to go down the line of this lawsuit? Because that's what you said. You said that you've made choices to go without. I'm just wondering, what is that? Because the executive assistant predated the choice of the lawsuit. Mm-hmm. The deputy auditor you've done without prior to the lawsuit. What is it that you say that, and I was glad to hear that you've done without, but what is that? What have you done without since the choice to launch the lawsuit?
Madam Auditor.
Madam Chair and Representative Nash, so before the lawsuit, in previous bienniums, we've had to make transfers between divisions to make it work so that we get through and get all of our work done, whatever that may be. So it's just it's a matter of managing a budget. My husband and I were in business for years. We started a business and we sold it. And during downturns, it got tight. So you made decisions. It was all, daily decisions about what you were going to do or not do to make sure you could keep your people. My focus is always keeping our people, and it's about 90% of our budget. And so it's keeping the people in place that do that hands-on work with the local governments, making sure that the numbers add up across the state of Minnesota. And it's not as simple as kind of going line by line. There's not a list. It's management, and it's building inefficiencies, and it's sometimes you have a position that you're working to fill and you don't have somebody who's qualified. It's a whole bunch of things.
I think there's just a disconnect between what his question is and what you're providing. So, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Auditor, you said just a couple of minutes ago that you were making choices on what to do without as a result of the lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And my simple question is, what are those things? What have you chosen to go without? I mean, are folks bringing their own light bulbs? Are they bringing their own paper clips? What are you doing to forego these new costs that are supposed to be for your department? You said you're doing without. You made a conscious decision to do without. What are those things?
Madam Auditor.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, we're not done with the biennium yet. And so I know I understand you're frustrated. I don't think I have an answer for you to tell you the truth. I'm within the law.
But Madam Chair.
I'm doing everything I can to manage this. It's within my authority and my duty. And it might mean something at the end of the year for us. That's when we do some equipment replacement. It might mean that we don't have money to cancel back to the general fund. I can't tell you yet because we're not there. But we're certainly here today to, as we were required, come in and let you know what it is we need in order to carry out our work that's in state law and in the Constitution. And as long as I'm the state auditor, I'll come and do the very best that I can for you. I've been asked this question probably over a dozen times at this point, and I don't think I'm going to have an answer that's going to satisfy you. But just knowing that I'm entrusted, this is part of my job, and I'm entrusted to do this work. And the legislative auditor is there to make sure that all laws have been followed and that all state policies have been followed. And if they haven't been, he'll certainly document that in a report that you will receive. Mm-hmm. But we've been very transparent about the work that we've carried out. And it's my job to make sure that we do our work on behalf of the people.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nash, and then we're going to Representative Vogel.
Madam Auditor, mm-hmm. You're right, I'm frustrated.
Yes.
And I'm frustrated because not just a couple minutes ago, you sat there and you told us, I've gone without. It's a logical question for me to ask of you, using your own words, what is it you chose to do without? And this isn't just this biennium. This is the previous biennium that you also launched this lawsuit in. So it had money from the last biennium. Mm-hmm. It's going to have money from this biennium. My question was very, very simple. What have you chosen to do without? And it seems that you don't want to give that answer. And you said just a second ago, now you don't have an answer. First you said I did without, and now you say you don't have an answer. So I'm just curious, which one was an accurate statement? Because you've chosen to do without. You know, I try to make it funny. Maybe are you eating more ramen? I don't know. But if you're going to tell us that you've chosen to do without, mm-hmm. obviously something in your mind has registered, oh, I went without that. That's the question. What have you chosen not to have as a part of your office as a result of your decision to pursue this lawsuit under your words of, I did without? That's the question.
Okay. Madam Chair, I think I got it. Representative Nash. And I apologize if I wasn't clear. The doing without I've been doing pretty much since I've been in office, and we've had a very, very tight budget. Managing a budget throughout a biennium within the different divisions and getting our work done is my job. And I am judged, and I answer to the people of Minnesota in terms of whether I've done a good job or a bad job. Now, it might not be clear to you, but I'll make it clear to you today. I'm not running for state auditor again. This office is the people's office, and it's here to protect $20 billion per year of their money. It's a protection that they're guaranteed in the Constitution, that our founders understood how important it was. And so although I know there's great frustration, and I'm sorry for that, I understand it, though. It's my job to do this job, to come before you, to help you understand what it is we need to carry out this work for the next biennium for the people of Minnesota. So I'm carrying out my duty on behalf of the people. And the lawsuit is very, very, very unfortunate. And I certainly don't like being in this position. And I don't want to rehash everything that happened in the middle of the last day of session, but it was a bit messy. And I did It was, and people were tired. And, you know, there are three branches of government, and it's very natural and healthy that there's these tensions that occur, right? So it's executive department and legislative department. Now we're in the judicial branch. But at the end of the day, I believe that I'm doing the best that I know how when I took my oath, which I said I would. And I think I have excellent counsel that's helping us through this. I've had strong encouragement from the people of Minnesota, bipartisanly, you know, by both sides. And there's more than two. There's actually probably four in the state of Minnesota, or five or six, to continue to carry this through because people think that it's just too important and they know how well it served us. So we are charged with getting our work done. We are following all the laws. We're working to make sure that the numbers add up. And that's on me. That's my job. So thank you for your question.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Madam Auditor. Okay. Yeah, we had some questions on the pension activity. Mm-hmm. And went back, and I'm looking in the governor's budget book here, and it says, you know, important activity, of course, because you're really monitoring the investment, the information that the volunteer fire departments are using for mm-hmm. for investments. And in looking at the general fund activity summary, there was kind of abnormally in 2015, there was a $102,000 cancellation. I'm wondering what that was related to, because then in 16 there was a $100,000 net transfer out that, you know, they and since there's no pattern that there's normally those things, I was wondering what would have caused that abnormality in 15 and 16.
Madam Auditor.
Madam Chair, Representative Vogel, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. We'd have to look at it.
Well, maybe we can get some staff to provide her with that page, and so she knows what we're talking about. And
sure.
Representative Vogel, what page of the budget?
We're on page 25 of the state auditor, the state auditor tab in the governor's the book that was just released.
Madam Chair, I don't think looking at the page is going to help us. We'd have to go back and look at the records to figure out what it is. So I don't need to see the page. We'll just have to get back to you on that.
Well, Representative Vogel?
Madam Chair and Madam Monitor, well, the thing is it's so untypical. I guess that's the reason I would ask, because, you know, having been a volunteer firefighter myself and knowing how important that pension is to them, you know, we had a drop in the full-time equivalents, which I understand might be a replacement issue, but, you know, you went from 5.1 FTEs in 14, you're projecting to be back at 5.8 in 17, but when these transfers were happening, you're down to 4.6 and 4.5. So with all of the conversation that's going on and then seeing that abnormality, it kind of piques my interest. And I would think that maybe since the $100,000 transfer out isn't a normal thing, that it might pique an interest, but apparently it wasn't that significant.
Madam Auditor, do you understand?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Vogel, I think I understand what you're talking about. The change in FTE can occur, let's say that a position becomes vacant for perhaps an unexpected reason. That can impact what our total FTEs are in terms of the hours someone's worked. That $100,000 we've talked about five times now, so we've already covered that one. That's managing within an appropriation, within a biennium, managing and getting your work done. The volunteer fire reliefs are thrilled with our staff, thrilled with our work. I'm sure they'd be happy to come in and testify to you in terms of all the work that we do to help them safeguard those monies, make sure they're in legal investments with that money. We have a great working relationship, and we work hard to help them be successful in getting certified for their fire state aid, because we do that as well, and helping them problem solve. And sometimes you'll get letters from us. You'll be copied on letters if they're in jeopardy of losing their fire state aid, because sometimes we need legislators to help us problem solve for their local volunteer fire reliefs. But there's no money that's come out of the pension funds. They're managed by those reliefs. And but I think the FTE observation is because there was a vacancy in that division. And I can't talk about personnel issues specifically, so I can't tell you exactly what happened, but that's why you're going to see some fluctuations sometimes in those numbers.
Representative Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, Madam Auditor, I guess the reason for the question is because the FTE, it looks like it's taken from 2014 to 2017 to get back to where maybe it needed to be. And my concern is that if there wasn't enough staffing, and then with the ambiguity of those two numbers being in there, it just kind of makes everything look a little different. So maybe if there's a possibility of getting some detail on what would cause that abnormality, that would be helpful both with the FTE and with the cancellation and then the resulting transfer the next year, which seems to be not consistent.
Madam Auditor.
Madam Chair and Representative Vogel, so I can do some high-level stuff with you. Our divisions are fairly small. The skills that people need to work in our office are fairly specific. And I do know that people also move on because they don't have a lot of opportunity for promotion in those really small divisions. And so sometimes they'll get opportunities to leave. And then we have to post the position. We have to interview for the position. You have so many days you have to leave it open. I know there was a period of time when we could not find qualified candidates. And we have fairly high standards in terms of who we hire in that office because they're there to serve the public. And so I do know that there was a point in which we had to do a second round of postings. We just didn't find qualified people. That does happen. And our job is to make sure that we bring in the best and brightest. So in terms of if there's a period of time where it looks low, or let's say somebody, I've got to be, again, very careful with personnel because that's not public, but, you know, if someone retires unexpectedly, someone passes away, someone gets very ill, there's all kinds of things that can impact the staffing in a division, and that's just management. But I think your questions are good, and I appreciate them, and I hope that helps a little bit. And it's not fun when that happens, you know, if you can't find qualified folks. It's because then someone else is working extraordinarily hard. But we work very hard to make sure that right now we've got a nice group in there and of good qualified people that are working with the reliefs. So, and I'm sure that if you check with your local reliefs, any of you, you're probably going to get very positive reports on the Office of State Auditor staff in terms of working to make sure they're successful in managing those service pension funds.
Representative Vogel.
Well, Madam Chair, I won't go any further because apparently it's difficult to answer now. It's just that I've got kind of an auditing mind, too, that suggests that when you have inconsistencies, it's good to find out the details, but it sounds as if maybe that's not available to us, so I'll just forego any more questions. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Auditor Otto, good afternoon. I'm a little bit intrigued, as you probably can imagine, by the discussion on pensions. And for the last biennium, I was the pensions chair. And this biennium, I'm the vice chair. We had the opportunity to, as you've mentioned, look at state relief plans and different things where the auditor has some different working groups. And early on in the biennium, you and your staff were available to answer questions and be present to follow up. I'm just wondering, there was a point in time where the auditor's office and yourself did not send representatives to answer questions and to interact at the commission meetings with the commission members. I'm just wondering if that's a result of the transfer of the $100,000 of operating costs from your budget and being allocated somewhere else that the pension commission wasn't able to have staff from your office to have a conversation. Thank you.
Madam Auditor.
Madam Chair, Representative Driscoll, I'll call you Vice Chairman O'Driscoll. Always appreciate working with you on the Pension Commission and your support of the volunteer fire reliefs and the working group bills that we send through. We look forward to working with you again. And no, the reason for somebody not being there is not because of what you just asked. It's more around sometimes our workload is heavier. It depends. We've had a lot of technology going on around forms in our office for the volunteer fire reliefs. We rewrote some forms. We have now just the fire form, and it replaced several forms because we try to build in efficiencies, as I indicated, for the folks that have to report to us. And as you probably know, the volunteer firefighters and the folks that have to fill out those forms like them when they're simplified, so they work with us on that project. And there's a lot of testing that goes on with that. And so you know, Rose, And Rose is in there working to test to make sure that the numbers are adding up so that they're ready to go for the folks so that they can get their forms filled out, we can review them, and we can work to get them certified for their fire state aid in time. If you ever have questions, I want you to feel free to call the office directly. We'd be happy to help you if you have questions. You know, we in the Office of State Auditor, we don't have like a government relations person. We don't have a position for that. And so if my staff ever go to hearings, it's because, you know, we have a bill, right? So the working group bill would be the annual bill. The bills have been fairly technical, and this year it's like pure technical. There's really nothing that's substantive or controversial, and so I think Rachel, the Pension Commission, has a pretty good handle on what those changes are. If you'd ever like us to help out, just let us know, and we'll see if we can get Rose over there for you. That's helpful.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Auditor Otto, when the commission asks for folks to come over to visit and be present, sometimes it may be because they have questions or there may be questions that come up from participants, for example, in the Fire Relief Association, some of the members who are coming, or the different groups that have been there. And the commission's made up of equal parts of the House and the Senate and from both major caucuses. And I guess I'd like to get a commitment from you that if there's an invitation that does come this year from the commission, as it has in the past, that you would send someone from your office to be available to answer the questions the commission has, and the very same people that we're working with to try to make sure that their benefits are preserved and looking out for their best interests and all of the other individuals. Because I don't want to get too deep into the details of when and how you were invited and different things, but we did extend invitations that I know were declined from your office. And so I'm just hoping that for the good of the people of the state of Minnesota, mm-hmm. that we can count on representation of the auditor's office at the Pension Commission when the Pension Commission does ask. And if I'm not mistaken, we've been asked if we could shift a couple of days of scheduling and things, and it didn't go quite the way that the commission had hoped we would have with the work with the auditor's office. So thank you.
You're welcome.
And again, I hearing that you're willing to commit to having folks there, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
And Madam Chair, if you don't mind, Representative Driscoll, and of course, we're used to Larry Martin, and Larry Martin would always contact us. We could answer, you know, questions from our data. What we won't do is make judgment calls, because that's the legislature's job. That's the Pension Commission's job. So if the Pension Commission needs to decide on what's good pension policy or not, that's not our job. But what we can do is inform conversations around the data that we have, you know, kind of the issues we may know that we have. So members are welcome to call us, but the Pension Commission staff is there to do that research and get the information for you all, and not my staff's job. So does that make sense?
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Auditor Otto. It does make sense, but one of the things that I can tell you about the makeup of the commission right now is we do have at least, I'm going to guess, pretty close to 50% of the people who are new to that assignment. And it's not that they're asking you for advice. They're asking you maybe for clarifications on the work that's been done and those types of things. So what they can make, as you said, their charge is to make policy as it relates to pensions. Mm-hmm. And so the constitutional office of the auditor being charged with that, it is nice to have representation to be able to ask those questions when making decisions. And being without that might be selling the people short, perhaps, in good public policy. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Madam Auditor, I'm glad that you're willing to come to the different committees to provide insight and get questions answered. I mean, we did submit to you on two separate occasions, at least, letters asking for information from your office. We have not, to this day, received a response to those. I've got one letter dated here of November 19th of 2015. Still have not gotten a response to that. So if you need a second letter, I'm happy to send that to you so you can provide the answers to the committee, because, as you know, we are charged with the oversight of your constitutional office, and we'd appreciate you giving that information so we can perform our duties.
Madam Chair, I apologize. Did you not receive our responses to your letters?
November 19th, 2015, you did not respond or provide answers to the questions that we've asked, and we've got a lengthy list here of the questions.
Madam Chair, did you not receive a letter from our office in response to your letter?
You never provided an answer to the questions that were provided in the letter.
Madam Chair, the letters that were sent to you, we've responded to all of your requests. We can't respond to your questions due to litigation. And as the general counsel stated, and it was there was a letter that specifically informed the committee of that issue. And, again, I have a respect for our Constitution and the three branches of government. So the judicial branch is currently dealing with an institutional disagreement on a law that was passed in 2015, and I hope that we can respect that process to play out because it's their job to interpret the laws. And the questions that you asked were regarding things that are in litigation that we are not able to respond to, and we did inform the committee, the entire committee of that. We sent letters, and I think we had to reiterate that again when we got the same questions that we're not able to discuss that. And if you'd like the general counsel to come back up, I'm happy to have her come up just to reiterate
just
that we...
Answer this question for me, Madam Auditor. When did you file the lawsuit? I believe it was February of 2016, correct?
Madam Chair, I don't know.
Maybe your counsel can help us. Can you provide us the date that you filed the lawsuit?
Madam Chair, the initiation of the lawsuit predates my involvement with the office, but I believe it was February 4th, 2016.
Okay. And, Madam Auditor, the letter that I sent to you was dated November 19th, 2015, so the lawsuit had not been filed, and you did not provide a response to it at all. All right. Representative Quam.
Madam Chair.
Madam Auditor.
Because we have this streaming so everyone can watch, I respect the Constitution, the three branches of government, and my duty to the people, and the promise that they get that they're going to have accountable, transparent government. So that's always where I work from, and I feel very strongly about honoring that commitment to the people of Minnesota as long as I'm the state auditor. And I just want to make sure that you are aware that I plan to see this through the judicial branch and the process that is provided for in our Constitution so that I fulfilled my duty. When I put my hand on a Bible, I take it very seriously. And so and I know that you're doing your job to the best of your ability as well. You took an oath. But that this is something that I need to do because the states where oversight on behalf of the people has been eroded, they are chasing corruption all the time. And it's a really ugly model, and Minnesotans don't want it. They want us to make sure we have strong systems in place on their behalf. And so that's what I'm doing, although frustrating. I know it's frustrating, and I don't like being in the lawsuit either. It's just what I have to do in order to honor that oath and the duty that I have to the people.
Well, I appreciate you providing the information to the questions that we asked. This letter was sent pre-litigation, and you still did not respond to it. But with that, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Auditor, your office oversees and audits local governments. Those local governments are elected and responsible to their citizens and community. This committee is responsible for oversight of your office. In my years of private sector at IBM and a couple other companies, I participated in audits of suppliers and then received ISO and other audits. And I'm used to having actual data mm-hmm. and numbers. My background is physics. So when we ask questions about numbers mm-hmm. and data, usually we're used to, getting those numbers and data back. I've heard a lot of discussion that confuses me because you've noted that there were savings because of staffing or salary, but the response we received from your assistant or the other testifier with you mm-hmm. was that there were no delayed hiring. There were zero. You received savings from zero opening or delayed positions. And then I'm listening to other testimony with questions from other members of the committee who say, well, across this time, the FTE went from above 5 to, the mid 4.6, 4.5, 5.8. And to me, 2 years is an exceptionally long time period in order to be missing something that you need because you're wanting to go up to 5.8, but you weren't able to hire. And when I've been in charge of a team, or I was coming before somebody, and it's a budget question, and I use examples, I would actually have the data be able to present and say, yes, there are, we had the savings, and yes, it was from X number of people.
Yeah.
And I'm used to seeing that kind of stuff, and I would assume that anyone involved with audits would be used to being able to answer questions with actual data and information and have that handy. You've got transparency you're speaking about.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, transparency is, if I use an example, I know that I'm probably going to be asked, well, what is that? And be able to provide it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think the frustration of both sides is the fact that maybe there's poor communication, but I think from my side, we've got a lot of questions asking for specific data directly related to statements made by yourself and others in your department,
mm-hmm.
and we're receiving verbiage. I tend to say it's like eating a styrofoam peanut. There's content, but no substance. You know, you're giving us something, but it's not answering the question. And I guess what I'm after is, you use examples such as, our budget's the same as it was for Judy Dutcher.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can appreciate that. Is that the constitutional office budget and all these other areas and divisions mm-hmm. that are, there are transfers, between? So I guess that would be one question that I guess could be answered by yes or no. When you reference to the budget being flat now compared to Judy Dutcher's budget when she left,
mm-hmm.
is that all inclusive or just the constitutional office?
Madam Auditor. Or Mr. Lindemann.
Madam Chair, Representative, that would be all inclusive. It would not be just the constitutional office division.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you. I'm glad because that was a direct answer, and it informed me of, what I asked about. So I'm hoping and eagerly anticipating that we'll have quite a few pages of actual data in regards to trying to clarify and understand. But again, I hope a reasonable person would be able to see that you dropped FTEs for 2 years, and that, that would either at least be understood as a abnormal thing that you would understand, well, we did, this project went through, and you said, okay, you did made the form simpler, and you saved money, and it worked better, and then now you're going back up 1.3 FTEs from 4.5 to 5.8. That's a fairly large percentage of activity. So, it'd be nice to know why, when you're asking for the additional FTE, what is the new function that you're adding back in? Over those 2 years, you're adding, a good 20% more work. What is the additional function you're adding in and asking us for the budget?
Mr. Lindemann.
Madam Chair, Representative, so when we're calculating FTEs for the budget presentation, I'm looking at actual hours that staff worked, so that's what you're saying for the history. The projected amount that we're doing is we do want to fill those positions because we do have work for them. Staff are working extremely hard. So that would be as if those people were working full-time. So it does not include overtime if the staff were to be paid overtime or if they were to just work, I don't know what else to say about that, but I mean that's just to clarify how we're calculating FTEs here. They're based on, you may have staff that come and go. You might have several turnovers within those two fiscal years. Which would might only account for one FTE or 1.5 FTEs. So it varies based on, the actual staff count varies based on actual work done.
Representative.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Auditor Otto. Mm-hmm. My question is around a look ahead, wondering if you've developed a strategic plan for your office moving forward should the district court ruling, I know you have your hearing coming up on the 9th, but should your district court ruling not turn out, you know, the way that you would hope, that it would be overturned?
Mm-hmm. Madam Otter?
Madam Chair and Representative Pugh, thank you for the question. You know, this uncertainty for all of us has been very difficult and uncomfortable and expensive. And, you know, my hope, I'm an optimist. We live longer when we're optimists, that the court will protect the Constitution of Minnesota. And, but if it, let's say that it weren't to work out the way I'm hoping, I'll, you know, analyze my options at that point. There is the Minnesota Supreme Court. I'd have to make a decision, figure out where we're sitting. But the law as written does create some issues. And without, see, she'll jump out of her chair if I say something I'm not supposed to, so I'm just kidding. I have to be careful with what I say, but it will be a real problem the way the law was written in terms of being there for the people of the state and maintaining the office. And so that's why I've been fighting the law. And so we'll have to wait and see what the judicial branch does, but it's the way the law is drafted, it would be extraordinarily difficult to plan for anything.
Representative Pugh?
Madam Chair, thank you. Well, you know, you've been Auditor Otto, you've been really clear about, you know, how concerning this is to you and how, you know, they're not really sure what's going to happen, but mm-hmm. that, and there may be another, you may continue to pursue this, mm-hmm. but it's very concerning to me that, you know, you don't have a plan in place. I mean, I know that, you know, I'm just reflecting on my experience prior to coming to the legislature. This is my first experience in public service. But before I came here, I had a 17-year career with Dayton's, including 7 years as the general manager, mm-hmm. Responsible for, you know, $40 million, the 400 employees, and, you know, when there would be anticipated turns in the, whether it was in business, in the economy. You know, I can reflect on when the new Rosedale store was in the process of getting a multi-million dollar remodel, and my store and the business overlapped more so than any two stores in the entire company. I knew that that was going to be a problem for my business, and I knew that in order to retain my employees that I cared so much about and to hang on to our market share, you know, we had to have a plan, mm-hmm. and I would imagine, I would hope, and I'm concerned that, you know, you're worried about it, don't really know, you know, what that's going to look like, but, I mean, most certainly, you have to have some sort of a plan, so I would like to hear a little bit more about what your thoughts are if this lawsuit, not only with the upcoming, you know, result of mm-hmm. of the hearing that you're about to have, but if you decide to pursue it, and this doesn't, you know, turn out the way you think. I mean, what are your plans?
Madam Chair, Representative Pugh. Why don't you come back up here? So, excuse me, Representative Pugh. So my general counsel has advised me that I should not discuss that with the pending litigation, and I apologize that I can't. I would love to talk to you about it. But she told me that that might be an issue for me. So I'm sorry, I can't answer your question.
Representative Pugh?
Madam Chair, Auditor Otto, just looking for something more than your optimistic at the outcome. I think that's great. I'm a really optimistic, super positive person, too. But it's just so important to give. I mean, I guess it's concerning, and maybe I'll have to leave it at that if there isn't anything more that you can say, but I will just express my concern that you said you haven't thought about this. You don't have a plan.
I've thought about it.
I didn't hear you say that, and I'm concerned about that greatly.
Madam Chair, if I can, and Representative Pugh, if I can clarify, it's not that I don't have plans. I can't discuss. I can't. I certainly have thought about it, and I have certainly considered what could be done, but I'm not able to share that at this moment due to the litigation. And depending on what happens, I would love to sit down with you. Okay?
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That'll be it for now.
Madam Auditor, so if you go beyond, if things don't land well for you on March 9th, are you going to pursue a Supreme Court lawsuit? Are you going to take it to the Supreme Court, I should say? And if so, what will be the cost incurred going to that level?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. I wanted to make, I don't think I covered this point, and I also forgot one other thing. I had a statement that I wanted to give to the members of the committee. If you don't, is there a page that I can hand, or John? Thank you. That I would appreciate having entered into the record. For the record, I want to make sure that everyone understands that we attempted to get representation from the Attorney General's office, and we had submitted a letter to them. And they told us that we had to go out and hire private counsel and that we would be required to use our budgetary funds to pay for that. And they also advised that we work to obtain a discount. And so that letter is in this statement. And the precedent was sent by the Mattson case in terms of how this was to be handled. The state was named in the suit initially. They recommended that we make sure we negotiate the rates with the firm, which we did. We were able to achieve a 15% discount on our billings. And then with the appeal that we're in, we were able to get the amount we're paying for the appeal capped. So we've done all that we can in order to keep the costs down. So now let me get to your next question, which is, do I plan on appealing to the Supreme Court if it doesn't go my way? And I'm looking at my general counsel, and she's looking at me like, no, you're not going to talk. So I will have to weigh my options at that point and figure out where we are at. But I can tell you that I will do this job to the best of my ability, as I said in my oath. I have very, very, very good legal counsel, and they have done an excellent job. I have an excellent general counsel, who I'm lucky to have working on behalf of the taxpayers of the state, and so we'll have to just wait and see. But as you know, the oral arguments are scheduled for March 9th. Madam Chair, I don't know, and I kind of doubt that they'll decide on the spot. I don't know if they're, how long it'll take them to decide, but we'll certainly alert you as soon as we know if that will work for you.
Madam Auditor, have you explored the option of if you pursued it further and what the cost would be?
Madam Chair, so if we had to go that route, I'll have to explore the options. Obviously, we have to keep costs down. Obviously, the budget is not unlimited. And that's just a reality in government. My job is to make sure we get our work done. I'm really hoping that the Court of Appeals goes the direction that I'm hoping. And I guess I'm just going to take it one day at a time. But we'll see.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I had a question, but prior to the question for Auditor Otto. I just want to go back and ask a question. So it would be helpful for me if we had the letters. I know we were referencing letters, because I do have a letter that was responded to here that was handed out, but I think there are other letters that some folks have that having not been here, not seen the letters, so that would be helpful, because I do have the one here that was responded to. So I just want to note that.
Happy to provide that.
Thank you. And then for my question, Madam Chair, to Auditor Otto. So looking at, I think we've had a lot of conversation around oversight, which is totally appropriate, and we're on this committee for that reason. And seeing that you have really a budget that's $17 million or, you know, with the general fund and your other funds, it's large. And we've had a lot of conversation around the lawsuit, the $252,000, which in the scope of the budget and all that you do and all that the office is responsible for, we've spent a lot of time on that. And I see we also have agenda items that are going to address that in terms of bills we're going to be hearing. So I would actually love to spend a few minutes just hearing about, you have a budget, you're using less general fund money, you know, you have historically, it's less general fund money. What's going well? Part of oversight is also identifying what goes well and what can we continue to do more of that's going well.
Madam Honor.
Madam Chair, Representative Olson. So, you know, there's this great document we put together in October. I don't know how much it's read, but it's the budget narrative for the office. And I know you all get a lot of paper. I think you've got quite a stack just for today for this office. But there are a lot of things going well, and thank you for asking. You know, we work to improve transparency whenever possible. We work to improve accountability whenever possible. My approach as the state auditor is, rather than just catching local officials doing something wrong, to actually help them do what's right in the first place so that we have better outcomes. It tends to be less expensive. And so, you know, we track web activity, and we track even just getting cities certified for their local government aid. We think it's a good thing when they get certified for it, right, because it means their financial stuff, their requirements have been accomplished. And when volunteer fire reliefs, my pension division is really happy when they can get almost all reliefs or all reliefs certified for their fire state aid, because that means that they've done a lot of things they're required to do by law. And so in this document, there's some nice pieces around different divisions and some of the things in terms of web traffic. We have financial reporting software, and financial software that local governments use are townships and our small cities. Representative Green, you've got a lot of entities in your district that use our CTAS software. And there's more and more users of that software currently, which I find very exciting. They're able to directly report to our office through that software, through a portal, and it compiles reports that are required to report to us on an annual basis. And so we have over 1,440 local governments using that software right now. It's a super efficient system. We're unique as a state for having that. And we had to do a major overhaul of that software, Representative Olson, that they got to be a part of and they were thrilled about. And so it's a really important tool for them to maintain their financial records. And I have a listing of the entities that are using the CTAS software, which we issue, maintain, we train on, and we provide updates to our local governments for a very, very small fee, which the legislature allowed for. So we're really proud of the CTAS overhaul and rewrite. And we had an issue for a little while with cities reporting on time and losing their local government aid, which some of you may be aware of because you might have had an entity that had that issue. In working cooperation with the League of Minnesota Cities, we're getting better reporting compliance generally, which is, again, a good thing. You hate to see them lose their aid. And it can happen for a variety of reasons. I'm trying to think of what else. But once in a while, you'll have an entity that they just don't have their act together and they don't get their information in and they lose their aid. And that's how the state has the program set up. So,
Representative Olson? Representative Omar? Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you might have said this earlier on, and I apologize if I missed it, but what are the plans for meeting in our committee today? Are we meeting till 5? Is that what you said? Just
For now, we're meeting till 5. If we have to come later, we'll come later as well. So, but we do have this room We don't have to move or anything like that. And I did mention that earlier. So.
Right. Yeah. So we plan on staying here until 5, more than likely.
If that's what it takes, yes.
Okay, yeah. Very good.
Or later, if need be.
Okay. And then, and just, I guess, a comment. I understand, sort of like what the representative over there said, the persistence of questions from your side of the aisle and the need for oversight, but I think there is a point at which we're starting to sort of go in circles, and there is a lawsuit pending that kind of puts a restriction on some of the answers that we have seen here, and it looks to me like the auditor has responded to questions, unless there's some I'm missing, and I get the sense that you're willing to respond to further questions in a written fashion. So I guess my point is that we're kind of exhausting as far as we can get to some extent. But you're the chair and do as you wish, but it just seems like we're kind of running around in circles here a little bit.
Well, appreciate that, Representative Johnson. You actually are the last person on the list. But I will tell you that we submitted questions to Madam Auditor prior to the lawsuit being placed, did not receive a response to the list of questions that were provided to her. I think the initial letter was actually sent in August of 2015, and then a subsequent letter was sent in November of 2015 with no response. And then also, if you'll remember, in the 2016 session, we had asked the legislative auditor, or excuse me, the state auditor to come before the committee, and she did not. So I think that there you'll find that members have some maybe stored up questions that they've been waiting for, do appreciate you coming today to provide hopefully some answers to that. But I think we still have some outstanding questions on it, too. But with that, just a moment, with that, I'd like to move into, we do have three different bills that are going to impact your office, and I'd like to get to those next, but I would like you to stay around because obviously it's involving your office. So, Madam Auditor.
Madam Chair, in terms of those questions that you asked that you keep referring to that you'd like answers to, my general counsel would like to respond.
Welcome. Please state your name again.
Yes, Madam Chair, Ramona Advani. Madam Chair, I just thought I would offer as a point of clarification in case of it's of help to the committee. With respect to the legal issues that keep us from talking about certain things, the doctrines of privilege and work product, they actually attach prior to a lawsuit being filed. So I think there might be a misconception that the concerns only arise once the lawsuit is filed. That's actually incorrect. They attach at the point that litigation is anticipated. And so that, I just wanted to offer that up so it might help to clarify why there are certain areas of conversation that can't be had even before a lawsuit actually is filed.
And, Counsel, that brings up another question for me because we had submitted a letter in August, and I know that Madam Auditor was asked, I think as early as June, the law took place, or the law was signed into law in June, and the question was asked if you're going to be pursuing a lawsuit. I'll have to check our records to see what the response was at that time, but it does bring the question of kind of the timing of things and when was this truly considered to be something that you're going to pursue, because that just helps us to figure that out. But I'll go through my records to see when everything fell into place for this whole piece. But with that, I'm going to ask Representative Lucero, Representative Nash, and Representative Marquardt to come to the table. They have three different bills. Members, if you look in your packet.
Madam Chair, would you like me to stay at the table, or do you want?
If you want, that would probably be
okay.
Helpful. Otherwise, you're just going to be coming back and forth anyway.
I'll just stay.
So everybody get cozy up there. Members, I'm going to move. Oh, because we don't have it. All right. I've got House File. I'm going to move House File 295 and House File 458 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill. We do not have Representative Marquardt's bill in our possession, so this is just for informational hearings purposes. So that's House File 807. And Representative Market, did you bring a testifier?
Madam Chair, I do.
And is he's from back home, isn't he?
That's correct. So
let's get him up here first so he can get
very
home.
Good. So that would be Barry Nelson, Becker County Commissioner. So.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Barry Nelson. I'm a commissioner from Becker County. I'm serving my fourth term. This is my 13th year.
Thank you.
We've been one of the counties named in the lawsuit, and I think you're all familiar with that, obviously, after the discussion. I just wanted to bring some numbers for your information, what Becker County saw for costs and what we've incurred that we are just absorbing. Some of the costs that we are absorbing are we were the prosecution or the auditor's attorneys were seeking discovery from commissioners, auditor staff, and administration. So all the hours that we spent looking at our own emails, at our own conversations, so we had to notify how many contacts. So that took a lot of time. Those type of things, our county attorney staff preparing stuff for our legal team that we hired. I think it's Scott Anderson is performing that. To date, those fees are out of county fees are $41,990.56. We obviously expect more cost to occur. And some of the history that I've been through as a county commissioner, when I started as commissioner, we had the state auditor. We were released in 2007 and 8, and for 5 years we had a private audit, and those audits were done by Hoffman, Dale, and Swenson from Thief River Falls. In 2009 through 11, those audit fees annually were $32,850. And that was 2011. In 2012, when we went back to the state auditor, those fees rose to $87,483. And in 2013, it was $87,366.
Say that last one again.
In 2013, our fees were $87,366.
Okay, go ahead.
Just the last point. I've talked to my constituents, and we have overwhelming support to fight for our rights to have a private audit done. And I just appreciate the legislation's views on that, and hopefully this ends real soon. It's very hard for the counties of our size to continue on with this type of litigation against the state. It's not something that we're comfortable doing. It's not Minnesotan. It's not who we are. We don't like even. We had a tough decision to even decide: are we going to fight this? I mean, this is a bigger issue than just our county. I feel this is the right way to do it. If there's cost savings for smaller counties or larger counties, they should be able to do that. If there's not, then they can stay with the state auditor. It's not that the state auditor wouldn't be a choice, but it is. It would be an option. When we went out, we asked for quotes, and we had multiple companies providing those quotes. The team that got it was, I think, our low quote at the time, and they actually came back and reduced their fees after they'd been with us a couple years because we provided that information to them so well. So I don't want to get into any more details than we need to, but I appreciate the legislation's direction in this.
And Representative Marquardt, did you want to add anything at all? Because otherwise I'm going to open it up to questions for Mr. Nelson and then make sure that he can get home. If you're going home tonight, I imagine it's a long haul. So,
well, Madam Chair, I'd like to talk a little bit about the bill and the reason for it. That would be okay.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
And so House File 807, and I think Commissioner Nelson really lays it out on the costs and just kind of everything these counties are going through right now to have to defend basically Minnesota state law that we all approved and defending that constitutionality of that. And so what House File 807 does is I think makes it right for, and I have two counties, Becker County and Wright County to be reimbursed for defending the constitutionality of Minnesota Statute 6.481, which we approved, against a lawsuit by the Office of the State Auditor. And just, I know it's been talked about quite a bit, but I don't know if there's been too much of a history for some that weren't here, but back in 2015, during regular session, as part of the state finance government bill, we passed this provision, which, for full disclosure, I supported, and the governor signed, and it basically said to counties, they have to do an annual financial audit, but it said to counties that not only do you have to, not only do you have a choice to go with the Office of the State Auditor, but now you could actually go out to your own certified public accounting firm. Something 3,000 other local entities already have the power to do. School districts, townships, I think cities except for the first class and other special districts. And so as that proceeded, and the reason I have just Wright and Becker County I represent along with Representative Green, but they kind of formed together to share costs, and Ramsey did not want to be part of it at the time, and I was just making this local. But I'd certainly be open to Representative Johnson, including Ramsey County. And as Commissioner Nelson said, between Wright and Becker County, I think it's over $80,000 of cost just for their attorneys, and I understand now Ramsey's over $20,000. So I'd certainly be willing to include that. But, you know, in state law, the state auditor still has the ultimate supervision. You know, everything that is done through the private CPAs have to be done with the same by standards set up by the Office of the State Auditor, has to be done in a procedure specified. The Office of State Auditor can come in and do examinations. They can question things in the public interest. So, you know, and that's ultimately on September 2nd, of 2016, the court case, which was in district court, second district court in Ramsey County, said that this law, Minnesota Statute 6.481, did not violate the Minnesota Constitution, and for a number of reasons. So right now what this bill looks for is to make it right for these counties to be reimbursed by the state for defending on behalf of the state of Minnesota and on behalf of the all 87 counties this law which we passed. And as Auditor Otto had mentioned, the Minnesota State Attorney did not get involved with this. So it was basically these three counties defending a statewide law and really defending for 87 counties. The hearings now for the next step are March 9th. And while I've talked to the Becker County Attorney, and she feels that these costs that are current could double. And so I do have $150,000 in the bill. That may not be enough, Madam Chair. And also in the bill that I have, House File 807, it actually is in this biennium, but also, as it was written up, could apply if this court case is still going into the next biennium over kind of 4 years where those costs could be incurred. So these counties are incurring some big costs, and they are really defending the state of Minnesota and defending for all the 87 counties. And that's why I think, as they have mentioned, instead of just having the costs incurred by only a few counties, they feel it would be fair to spread that statewide as we defend this lawsuit. So thank you, Madam Chair, very much for hearing this.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Members, any questions for Mr. Nelson? Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Nelson, for coming down. I know the drive, as does Representative Marquardt. It's a trek. I really appreciate you coming down. I appreciate you doing this on behalf of the people. I know Becker County, like a lot of our counties up north, a lot of tax forfeited land, a lot of shrinking tax base. Is this $55,000 extra that you're paying for the audits every year plus the $40,000 plus lawsuit? Is that something that's going to be easily absorbed by Becker County?
Commissioner Nelson.
the fees that, you know, these fees of $41,990 have come over the last, you know, the last year, and then this year, we run on the calendar year as our fiscal year. Do we have the reserves to pay it? Absolutely. Is it something that was budgeted for? No. And we like to, I mean, obviously you like to stay within your budgets, and we chose to fight this battle. So do we have, will we pay for it? We have. I mean, so I don't know.
Representative Green.
Thank you. And I know you guys do a good job there. And so my next question is, we've heard a lot of talk today about representing and defending the citizens of Minnesota. Who are the taxpayers going to be paying this now, if you add in the two audits plus the $40,000, nearly $150,000? Is that coming out of taxpayers' pockets?
Commissioner Green, or Commissioner Nelson, excuse me.
You know, we have to pay for the state audits currently, so we are still under state audit. So we'll be paying for the state audit. It's a separate fee than the fighting of the lawsuit. So, yes, the property tax will be paying for battling this, you know, our will fund our portion of the state audit.
Thank you.
Yeah. Or the state lawsuit, excuse me.
And Commissioner Nelson, did you ever get a reason of why it jumped so much? $50,000 cost?
Well, that was from a private firm to the state auditor. So when we went back, it increased because it went back to the state auditor.
Okay.
The state auditor's office performed it in those years.
Got it.
The cost savings was a private.
Got it. Members, any other questions? If not, thank you for coming. I appreciate it.
Madam Chair, thank you, and legislators, thanks.
And Representative Margaret, appreciate you coming with your bill. Yes.
Well, Madam Chair, can you comment on the bill?
This one is just informational, but yes, feel free. Yeah.
Madam Chair and members and Representative Marquardt and Commissioner Nelson, I'm in support of this concept. I don't think the residents should have to shoulder the burden of these costs. And you know, how you do that, I'm not sure. General fund appropriation would make sense. We did name the state when we filed the lawsuit, and the state declined to participate. And so the counties have been, as Representative Marquardt said, and Commissioner Nelson said, they're carrying it. So I would be in support of the concept of not saddling those taxpayers with these costs, but actually for the loss, the litigation costs, the state considering covering those, as it's a statewide issue.
So, Madam Auditor, you're more interested in having all Minnesota taxpayers pay for it then?
Madam Chair, I don't even want to be in this position at this point, but it's where I find myself, and I put my hand on a Bible, and I'm going to honor that.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Thank you, Commissioner Nelson. Representatives Lucero and Representative Nash, you've got your bills. Okay. And Representative Lucero, I understand you have a testifier as well. You want to join on the table? We'll start with you, Representative Lucero, on House File 458. Can you give us a description of your bill, and then we'll go to your testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My bill, House File 458, is similar to the Marquardt bill, but that it does include all three counties, Becker, Wright County, and Ramsey County, and it seeks to have the costs incurred for defending themselves be reimbursed not by the state, but by the state auditor's office. And so with that, I do have a background here, but I'll turn it over to my testifier.
Sure. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record, who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brian Oslison with the Wright County Attorney's Office. I'm chief deputy in that office. Madam Chair, I can't really add much to what Representative Marquardt and Commissioner Nelson stated. They stated it very well. Our county board did have a very difficult decision once the litigation was commenced back in February of last year. And that decision was whether or not we would take on the burden of, defending the lawsuit, knowing that our taxpayers would be paying that, and knowing also that that's something that we really don't budget for. Obviously, we do have lawsuits all the time where the county is named, but for the great majority of them, we have coverage through the Minnesota County's Insurance Trust, and this type of legal action is not covered by that coverage. our legal costs for outside counsel, we went together with Becker County. They would be the exact same amount that Commissioner Nelson mentioned, something just short of $42,000 at this point. So $84,000 between the two counties has been expended. We also anticipate that costs will continue to rise. Auditor Otto has mentioned, the oral arguments are on March 9th, and we would expect, you know, several months later to receive a decision from the Court of Appeals, but the possibility exists that the litigation could continue after that point. And I know I'm here with the support of the Wright County Board of Commissioners. They feel like Becker County, Wright County, and Ramsey County are kind of carrying the water for the entire 87 counties, and that's why we're here seeking reimbursement. Thank you, Madam.
Members, any questions for Mr. Oslison? Madam Auditor, any comments to the legislation?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. So this legislation, again, attempts to make the counties whole. It's taking it from the Office of the State Auditor budget, which is quite awkward, frankly, when you're in litigation. And so I would request and would be opposed to that. I think it's more appropriate for it to come from the general fund to be able to carry out our work on behalf of the people. And let's see here. There's another piece, too, around schedule of charges in terms of the audit rates that we must charge. It says that we have to go back to, for 2017, we must use the schedule of charges for calendar year 2016 instead of 2017. And we have prepared a fiscal note on that for your committee. I don't know if you've all had a chance to look at that. We're in an enterprise fund, and state law requires that we schedule, complete a schedule of charges based on.
Madam Auditor, mm-hmm. I'm just going to interrupt one second. I think you're referring to Representative Nash's bill.
Oh, darn it. I saw Lucero. So, okay, which number?
We'll pause on that just for a moment.
Which one is it?
House File 458.
Oh, can I see? Thank you. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
I thought I had the right one. Okay,
sure.
So this one. So it asks the Office of the State Auditor to reimburse counties that they're in litigation with. So I guess I think, you know, as I said with Representative Marquardt, I'm supportive of the concept of the state considering reimbursement of the counties because the state declined to participate in this litigation. And, again, we have a constitution that sets out these branches and the system. But in terms of taking it out of the Office of the State Auditor is quite awkward, and also the timing of it may be problematic. So I would ask that everyone be patient and allow the process to play out in the judicial branch in terms of deciding who pays legal fees, which they also do work on. And we don't know what the total costs are at this point either, unless you're going to be appropriating additional funds for this. But it is, it's highly unusual. Let's see here. Is there anything else? And then also, I believe in Section 2, it attempts to tie my hands and not allow me to carry out my duty in terms of going to the judicial branch, working within the appropriation that I have received to carry out the work on behalf of the people. And I would ask that I don't think this is a wise idea either, because it does not allow me to carry out my duty to the people of Minnesota that I have sworn to do, and I'm deeply uncomfortable with that. And I think we all owe them a duty to allow this institutional disagreement to work through the court system.
Yeah. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have I prepared probably a three-minute background here, but I will cut that short with just a few. In 2003, a provision included in the state government finance bill passed in special session authorized the counties to receive the audits from private CPA firms with the approval of the state auditor, as this committee is well aware. Then in 2015, the provision we're discussing, instead of the counties having to go to the state auditor to get approval to utilize private CPA firms, they could then simply notify the state auditor that they would be doing the same. And the list that I have here, it includes 28 counties that the state auditor had approved under pre-2015 law change, that the state auditor had allowed to go out and utilize private firms, CPA firms. One of those counties is Wright County. And so the state auditor was fine and found it acceptable that Wright County engaged in this practice. Excuse me, Madam Chair, I'm getting over a cold, so I appreciate the indulgence. And then after the law changed, that list of counties that the state auditor had approved of 28 grew now to 44. And I have a new list here. And so there are quite a few counties that believe they are better off for one reason or another to utilize private CPA firms. And it is not the responsibility, or should not be the responsibility, of our three counties, including Wright County, to foot the bill. And our taxpayers of Wright County, Ramsey County, and Becker County to be denied the tax dollars that would otherwise be used for other purposes. And I will just finish with this. When the 2015 law change came up, there were some opinions from various counties as to that particular provision in favor of it, and I'll just read a few here. So according to the Duluth-Austin Herald in June of 2015, Maurer County coordinator said private audits have been more timely, cheaper, and better for the county. According to the St. Cloud Times, May of 2015, the state auditor notified Benton County in 2012 that the state auditor planned to take back the auditing duties the state auditor had previously permitted to be engaged with a private CPA firm. According to the Benton County administrator, the county's auditing costs went from $44,500 to $56,700 as a result of being brought back into the state auditor, and then also stated, I'm not sure I quite understand why the state auditor would have a monopoly on county audits. According to the St. Cloud Times, also in May of 2015, the Sherburne County administrator said his county would like the option of getting competitive bids for audits, and also said, I'm struggling a little bit why all counties shouldn't be given this option. And then finally, Madam Chair, a line in the Star Tribune article, again, when this was discussed in 2015, so from June of 2015, stated, what this debate boils down to is fairness. Is it fair to require Minnesota county taxpayers to foot the bill for a service that is already not required for all other local units of government in Minnesota? So, Madam Chair, this, my bill, 458, is about fairness, and I appreciate the committee's time and their consideration.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. And members, because we have this before our committee, I need to ask if there's anybody in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill at all. And welcome. Please come on down. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me. My name is Matt Hilgart. I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. I assumed I would be called down at some point today, so I just wanted to get up here and state that while we have no position on any of the specific bills, we are fully supportive of these counties seeking reimbursement for the state from the state on what their taxpayers have paid as of now and into the future on this litigation. And I can stand for questions if anyone has any.
Members, any questions? Okay. And any questions for Representative Lucero or Mr. Oslison? If not, thank you. And I'm going to renew my motion that House File 458 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill. Representative Nash. I've moved your bill. Do you have any testifiers, Representative Nash?
Madam Chair, you'll be happy to hear that I don't.
Okay.
Have any testifiers?
Can you give me a Twitter version of your bill?
A Twitter version of my bill, Madam Chair. Thank you. We're going to move this over for possible inclusion, I believe.
Correct.
Madam Chair, sometimes we name our bills. I think this is the throwing good money after bad bill. It essentially says that we have spent enough of the taxpayer of Minnesota's money on this lawsuit. And we've heard from the auditor today that even transfers into her fund have come from general fund appropriations. And I'm simply saying very, very simply that new appropriations will not be used for that. There will be no increases in fees and charges as a result of her activities, and that there was, I believe, a calendar date of money appropriated prior to January 1st, 2017, that after that nothing else can be used. So very simple, very straightforward. That's the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Nash. Madam Auditor, response?
Yes, Madam Chair and members. I would respectfully request this bill not be. I don't support it. And the reason being is that it, again, attempts to tie my hands to not carry out my duty on behalf of the people and working to defend and fight for our Constitution. The Constitution is the people's sovereignty. The people don't want undue power in any one branch of government. The judicial branch is there to determine and decide when there are disputes, confusion, or interpretation issues around statute. It's their job to interpret those statutes. So this is almost like putting a rider on language on money that's already been appropriated. I'm very frustrated by the whole thing and wish it had not occurred. I've asked the legislature to repeal the law with no response. The governor asked the legislature to repeal the law during the special session after the 2015 session, and that did not occur either. And so I've been very clear about the issue, my duty to the people, my duty to fight for their interests and for their protections that they're guaranteed. So, you know, we have already paid for our appeal to the Court of Appeals, and it was capped. And I don't know we'll have to move if we'll have to do anything further beyond that. I'm hoping that we don't. But this does, you know, there's supposed to be comity between the three branches of government, meaning that each branch has a due respect for the other branch and allows it to carry out its work that they're charged with doing. I'm charged with working to represent the people's best interests as the state auditor with the staff that I have to carry out our duties according to statute and their expectations. So that's what I'm doing, and I have to do it within the law and within the budget. It is frustrating. I explored all options before having to go to this option. But to attempt to tie my hands retroactively and not allow me to carry out my duty is very disturbing to me, and I would request that you not do it. Now, the schedule of charges, state statute requires that we recover our costs on the audits. And when we put out the rates, which we did at the end of 2016, it's based on contracts that are negotiated with the state. You know, the state does it, and then the legislature approves, you know, salary increases and whatever else. And we have to reflect those in our audit rates. So that's out of our control. The way this office has been funded since the beginning of time generally is that we have to recover those costs. And to make us go back to the 2016 rates means that, you know, it will have an impact on the enterprise fund, which is like a business. There's user fees, and it's the way the legislature has set up our funding, unless you're planning on changing how we're funded. But this will have an impact on the enterprise fund. In the fiscal note that we provided to you, it will also have an impact on our audit clients. It's probably going to further increase rates for audit clients going forward, so it's a negative impact on local governments, which I would not be in favor of nor support. I don't think that's fair to them. And so I just wanted to bring that to your attention. But there is a fiscal note with detailed information in it about the impact it's going to have going forward and our ability to do that work.
Representative Nash.
Well, Madam Chair, members, you know, we heard not just a few minutes ago that the auditor is able to forego some things and find savings to in order to lodge some of the lawsuit. And I would say that this is taking her at her word. This bill says that the taxpayers' money has been utilized for this lawsuit. I think it's 200,000. That's a lot of money. It's been capped. You know, I think that this is a fair request to the people all across our counties who are looking at us to say it's time to put an end to this. And if the auditor is truly able to scrimp and save and find ways to not spend new money or to look within her budget, I would encourage her to do so.
Okay. Because this bill is before us, I'm going to ask if there's anybody from the audience that wishes to testify to this bill.
Madam Chair.
Members, questions?
Madam Chair, I need to comment on something that he said.
Madam Auditor.
Madam Chair and members, so in terms of the Enterprise Fund with the State Auditor, in the State Auditor's Office around the rates, the change in Subdivision 2, there has not been a penny paid out of that. So that has nothing to do with the lawsuit. We haven't touched any funds in the Enterprise Funds. It's been the General Fund appropriation, which is small considering most government, state government. So so that piece is separate from what you just commented on. The other piece in terms of requiring us to pay the legal fees of entities we're currently in litigation with, I think sets a very dangerous precedent. I do support your committee, if you're able, to potentially reimburse the counties for their charges that they're incurring, as it's a statewide interest, but the state declined to participate in this litigation. But to tie my hands and not allow me to carry out my duties and my oath and protecting the taxpayers, the state, and $20 billion worth of their money is, again, like I said, it's disturbing, and I definitely am opposed to it.
Okay,
and I speak on behalf of the people of the state.
Members, any questions? Final word, Representative Nash.
In the interest of brevity, I've said enough.
Okay, with that, I renew my motion that House File 295 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill. Representative Kreisha. Thank you, Madam Auditor.
This is another bill. Okay, got it.
I don't think you want to stay for this one.
No.
Oh, come on now. It's done.
No offense, Ron. Sorry. Okay. And Representative Kreisha, do you have any testifiers?
I do not. I have one. I have one, Madam Chair.
One testifier. Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please state your name.
Representative Ron Kreisha.
And I am going to move your bill, House File 400, be referred to the General Register. Or excuse me, I apologize, I forgot. Ways and Means.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
There we go. Representative Kreisha, can you give us a description of your bill?
I will. So, Madam Chair, members, thank you for having me. House File 400 just simply does one thing, and that is we do not subsidize discrimination against Israeli companies. There's a movement of the BDS movement that has been through Europe and nationwide, and all the way down from President Barack Obama, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And at the federal level, we have said that this is just not good practice. This follows along the lines of something we did in 2014, which was the Women's Economic Security Act, which basically says the state should not subsidize discrimination of women and minority groups, nor should they, I'm extending that to discrimination against Israeli companies. So that's very simply what my bill does, and I'll turn it over for testifiers.
Great. And your first testifier, Mr. Roberts. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you very much, Chair Anderson. My name is Ethan Roberts. I am the Director of Government Affairs for the Jewish Community Relations Council of Minnesota and the Dakotas. And I really want to thank Representative Kreisha for authoring this bipartisan legislation. Representative Kreisha has been terrific working with us and working with colleagues across the aisle. We have made several adjustments to this bill to make it as bipartisan as possible. There was an hour of testimony last week in the policy division. We have only brought myself, and I'm going to be as brief as I can. I know you're in overtime, and many of the arguments have already been said and repeated over and over again. As Representative Kreisha noted, this bill has been approved already in 16 other states, red states, blue states, and it is a bipartisan response to the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, which is seeking to demonize and discriminate against our ally Israel. And though the BDS movement masks their goals in the universal language of human rights and free speech, it's anything of the sort. They apply double standard upon double standard on the world's only Jewish state, and they ignore the deplorable human rights records of Israel's neighbors. The goal of the BDS movement is nothing short of destruction of the state of Israel. Because one of the main goals of the BDS movement is economic warfare, this legislation ensures that Minnesota will no longer contract with vendors who subsidize discrimination against Israelis simply because they are Israelis. With this legislation, however, we're not only standing up for our values as Minnesotans, we're also standing up in support of our longstanding relationship with Israel, which includes a business relationship. Minnesota currently has $87 million worth of trade with Israel. Over 100 companies are doing business in Israel, companies such as Medtronic. So by supporting this legislation and saying no discrimination against Israelis, we're also saying yes to these human connections, which are improving the lives of Minnesotans everywhere. Now, as a representative of the Jewish community, the public affairs voice, I want to make it clear that we don't see any contradiction between our unwavering commitment to two states for two peoples, including a free and independent Palestine, and opposing the demonization, delegitimization, and leveling of impossible double standards against the Jewish state of Israel. And in fact, we're proud of our work that we have done at the JCRC to be an ally, and just that. We're not seeking to co-opt the Palestinian cause for Palestinians who are striving to move from charity and dependence to investment and independence. We have hosted leading business Palestinian businessmen here in Minnesota, led delegations of Minnesota lawmakers, including several of your colleagues, to the West Bank, and are constantly looking for ways to leverage our relationships to empower Palestinians who want to build a better future for their people. Now, in your packet, for example, you have an op-ed that was published in today's Star Tribune from a dear friend of mine, Waleed Issa. I've had broken bread with him at his parents' home in a refugee camp in Bethlehem. It's an excellent piece. I highly recommend that you read it, as well as the piece written by my colleague, Jacob Milner, from the Israel Project. I was also prepared to come today to defend the constitutionality of the legislation. We believe it is constitutional. However, in deference to the fact that we are in ongoing conversations right now with the ACLU, which began yesterday and have continued today, in deference to the fact that we are currently working up language, which should be ready the next time the bill is heard in another committee, where we're hoping to bridge the gap with them, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go into the legal arguments because I think that we can reach an agreement with them. You know, we do believe it's constitutional as written, but if we can continue to work with those who have objections, as we have in the past, for example, on the language regarding the territories or other things, we want to do that. I work for the Jewish Community Relations Council. Our work is about building relationships and not being partisan. And we are very fortunate that with Representative Krisha, we have an excellent partner who has done above and beyond to make this bill as workable as possible for as most number of people as possible. And I thank you very much, Chair Anderson, and members of the committee for hearing us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Members, any questions for Mr. Roberts? Okay, I have got, I'm going to go with Jim Bush first. And then I'm going to have Barry Cohen come next. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bush, and I'm a member of the Mayflower United Church of Christ in South Minneapolis, and a member of their immigration team, which works with immigrants and asylum seekers in the Twin City area and beyond. This seemingly piece of harmless legislative proposal, House File 400, is anything but that. With all due respect, in my opinion, the legislator should not attempt to preempt and punish positions taken by individuals or organizations that address very complex legal, moral, and ethical issues. Last month, Minnesota Conference of the UCC gathered a group of 12 individuals from across the state's member churches to embark on a 10-day trip to Palestine and Israel to learn firsthand more information about the challenges in that area, as well as to visit the sacred sites that we had read about and learned about from early Sunday school days and on. We traveled from Tel Aviv to Bethlehem, which was our main base, to Hebron, Ramallah, and other locations on our sacred journey. What we saw, the separation barriers, both the walls and the armed checkpoints, and the settlements on the high points of what had been Palestinian land, it was a vivid reminder of the physical, psychological, environmental, and emotional harm that these barriers do to fragment the country and communities that are now occupied by Israelis. The changes of everyday routines, going to work, shopping, worshiping, getting health care, visiting relatives and friends, were all altered to a great degree of inconvenience. What we heard was a common thread from the Palestinians and Israelis was that they wanted to live in peace together, that they disliked being separated from each other, and that the Palestinians we visited with had no hatred of the Israelis. They only wanted to be treated fairly and equally in all areas of life. And yet the current Israeli government continues to expand settlements on Palestinian lands, expanding the wall and the checkpoints with what seems to be total disregard to international law and the UN sanctions against their actions. Most recently, the UN Security Council voted 14-0, with the U.S. abstaining, to censure Israel for repeated violations. And since the election of President Trump, the Israeli government has retroactively ratified and approved more than 3,000 housing units onto the West Bank. The Palestinians view the BDS movement as being one of their best peaceful, nonviolent measures to get the Israeli government attention to recognize and correct the current occupation of Palestinian land. I strongly disagree with a statement made by Jacob Milner in Monday's Minneapolis Star Tribune op-ed page, in which he urged legislators to boycott companies supporting the BDS movement. He further stated, and I quote, "The BDS movement doesn't seek to change Israelis' policies or behaviors. It seeks to undermine Israelis' right to exist at all," end of quote. The reality is the BDS movement is directed at the policies of the state of Israel and not the Jewish people. It is patterned after the successful measures used to end apartheid in South Africa and more recently, in part, the efforts in North Carolina to get the repeal of the infamous bathroom bill. In both cases, the successful economic boycott efforts caused cessation of efforts by the proponents. I want to reiterate my belief that the BDS movement is an effort to encourage Israel to be at its best self and to seek a future that is secure, safe, and protects the rights and dignity of all. This trip strengthened my belief that the separation barriers cause more damage to people, communities, and country psyches, and to the environment with little discernible increase in security. Dean Eric Schwartz of the Humphrey Institute at the University of Minnesota, who opposes the BDS movement, but in a January 26 letter to the Minneapolis Star Tribune, strongly advised against passage of this legislation, and I quote, "If the Minnesota legislator wants to play a helping role in supporting both Israel and a two-state solution, they should go back to the drawing board and develop a proposal more conducive to human rights, respect for the rule of law, and the long-term security of Israel," end of quote. I strongly agree with his assessment, and in perhaps a lighter vein, agree with our Palestinian guide, who responded when asked about his opinion for a peaceful solution to the crisis. He said, "Put all the politicians on a remote island, build a wall, and let the people make the decisions and decide." Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bush. Members, any questions for Mr. Bush? Thank you. I'm going to have Mr. Cohen come next, and I will tell you, if you have written testimony, you can submit that to us, as Mr. Bush did, and then you can just summarize your statements, because we will...
I am going to summarize.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Barry Cohen. I'm a Jewish resident of St. Paul, Minnesota, member of a Jewish congregation here in town. I'd like to say that our Jewish community is divided in our views on BDS, as you're hearing. The right to support BDS and policies of the Israeli government, we don't speak with one voice, and the organizations that are promoting this bill, the Israel Project and JCRC, don't speak for me and many other members of our community. Like many, I, for years, did support the two-state solution as a peaceful and just resolution of the Israeli and Palestinian conflict. And while many continue to pay lip service to this outcome, unfortunately, facts on the ground have closed that door. Israel's military authority in a 50-year occupation, we're into year 50, in a 50-year occupation of the West Bank has demolished thousands of Palestinian homes, condoned and abetted construction of illegal Israeli settlements, now 400,000 Israelis living on the West Bank, expropriated Palestinian fields and orchards for barriers, roads, and checkpoints. As military occupiers, Israel has denied the Palestinians their basic human rights, and as non-citizens in occupied territories, their civil rights. And worse yet, I mean, you've heard that quote, one death is a tragedy, 10,000 is a statistic. We're at that point. The bloody toll of these policies has cost thousands of civilians, Israelis and Palestinians alike, their lives. BDS supporters like myself have concluded that Israel will not negotiate or change its policies without economic pressure from communities within the U.S. and abroad. And as Jim just said, boycott is a nonviolent grassroots and legal means to achieving political objectives. Think of our own civil rights movement and the Nashville boycotts, the Montgomery boycotts and the boycotts of Woolworth that helped end segregation here in the United States. So what I'm asking you today is, as our legislators, let us debate this in the public square. Don't take sides. Uphold our rights to support BDS. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. Any questions, members? Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not yet.
Oh,
I'm good.
Okay. For the testifier, yes. Ms. Bellamy. And then after that, Ms. Rosoff. So if you're on deck, please come down to the front row, please. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record. And
thank you. My name is Ann Bellamy.
Welcome.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman, committee members. I am a resident of St. Paul. I've been so for 30-plus years, and I'm here to state my opposition to House File 400. On the Human Rights Watch website, the following is posted, quote, Israel enforces severe and discriminatory restrictions on Palestinians' human rights, and it builds and supports unlawful settlements in the occupied West Bank. Its security force appears to use excessive force against Palestinian demonstrators and suspected attackers, raising the specter of extrajudicial killings, end of quote. Information about this conflict and its history is really hard to find in totality. Our media tends to cover part of it, and you have to look for it, but you can find the information that our media has not covered. I had difficulty accepting that the Israeli government has a brutally oppressive regime towards the Palestinians. This did not square with my experience with Jews or my understanding of Israel. I went to high school. Most of my friends, sounds crazy, but it was very much half the school was Jewish. I knew Jewish kids, and we got along well. This was shocking to me. It did not square with my understanding of what Israel was or what Jewish people were. However, I have learned to distinguish the Jews from the Israeli government. I know that criticizing Israel and boycotting Israel is not anti-Semitism. Boycott is aimed at pressuring the Israeli government to end the occupation and stop unlawful settlements. This strategy was instrumental in ending apartheid in South Africa. Archbishop Desmond Tutu encouraged its use to end this conflict, which has lasted many, many decades too long. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bellamy. Ms. Rosa?
I think she's not here.
Okay. And I should ask, any questions for Ms. Bellamy before she leaves? Okay, no, thank you, Ms. Bellamy. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record.
Darin Zidane.
Oh, okay, so you're not, okay.
No,
are you substituting?
She's not here,
okay.
So I'm substituting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And can you say your last name again?
Zidane.
Zidane?
Yeah, Z-E-I-D-A-N.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon to the chair and the members of the committee. My name is Darin Zidane, and I'm from Palestine. I oppose this bill because the BDS movement is an economic movement to compel Israeli's government to stop its violation of the basic rights, human rights of the Palestinian people. I'm a Palestinian woman who has been discriminated against openly by Israel because of my national origin and religion. My family lived in exile for decades, along another 7 million refugees who are still denied their international right to return to their homeland. I received the Fulbright Fellowship to study at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. I worked in development sector in my homeland, mainly in youth employment, since unemployment rate is more than 40% in the West Bank and Gaza. The main reason for this desperate economic situation are restriction of movement, land confiscation, house demolitions, and limited access to natural resources, all imposed and promoted by the Israeli government. This movement is a form of a peaceful political protest. It's a form of free speech. In fact, in American history, it's full of boycott as political expression, from its founding to black civil rights movement of the 1960s. Punishing companies or individuals that choose to participate in that form of speech is unconstitutional. Some say those who oppose this bill are against the Jewish people or anti-Semitic. Since I moved here to Minnesota, I have made more Jewish friends than Muslim. I have delivered speeches in synagogue, and I have worked on peace initiative with Jews and Israeli to improve dialogue and bring peace. In fact, there is a long tradition of Jews standing with Palestinians against the ongoing policies of the Israeli government. To say that opposition to Israel translates to hatred of Jews is simply not true. I encourage each one of you to visit Palestine and Israel. Go see the beautiful historical sites, but also make sure you see the separation wall, the armed military checkpoint, the illegal settlements, the separate roads of Jews and non-Jews, and all other vivid signs of an ugly occupation. I live those injustices every day. Even if you pass this bill, the global movement that links individuals to speak about injustice will endure. Since I came to U.S., American University professor and individual have taught me to value free speech, equal justice, and above all, human dignity. It is my wish to return to my homeland and apply what I have learned from them. Please vote against this bill. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Is there any questions for Ms. Zerdan? Representative Omar. Ms. Zerdan, can you come back? Sorry. Representative Omar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that beautiful testimony. I just wanted to ask you one clarifying question. Can you distinguish what the difference is between Israel and Jewish?
Mr. Dan.
Thank you. Thank you for your question. So basically, since I came to the state and I have the ability to meet Jews and Israeli who live in the state, people were always asking me, oh, you hate, they have the misconception or misassumption of me hating the Jewish people. And that's not true. When we talk or criticize the Israeli government, that means we are criticizing Netanyahu policies against human rights and violating Palestinian human rights. And that's a huge difference because the conflict was never against religion. Pre-1948, my grandma is from Akko City in Israel, and she told me a story about living with Jews in peace before 1948 and established the Israeli state. And I wish we can all live in peace because I have the opportunity here to celebrate Sukkot and other religious celebration with my Jewish friend that I cannot do back home. So I hope I can carry this message when I go back.
Representative Omar.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I've got Reverend David Smith. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name.
Thank you. I'm Reverend David Smith, a priest of the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis, an emeritus professor of theology at the University of St. Thomas, and I founded their program in Justice and Peace Studies some 30 years ago or so. This is not a question of protecting a stable and just Israel from an attack. Rather, the state of Israel is carrying out an ethnic cleansing of non-Jews through destruction of homes, orchards, and infrastructure, seizure of farmland, water, and other productive resources, unreasonable restrictions on movement and normal life, arbitrary murder and administrative detention. The aim is to produce an apartheid Greater Israel, including the occupied territories, which by law privileges Jews, minimizes the number of non-Jews, and denies those non-Jews effective control over the circumstances of their lives. This racist project violates international law. If people who in conscience oppose this project are not allowed to use the nonviolent tools of boycott, divestment, and sanctions to resist it, what tools should they be allowed to use? Please don't protect a racist ethnic cleansing.
Members, any questions for Reverend Smith? Thank you, Mr. Smith, or Reverend Smith. Mr. Shearer. And folks, is there anybody else, before he comes up, is there anybody else that wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, Mr. Shearer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Matt Shearer. I'm the Legislative Director for the Department of Administration. Just wanted to say a couple of items of concern to the bill generally. First, though, admin does not have a position with relation to the Arab-Israeli conflict, nor do we intend to unless law compels us to. From there, I just wanted to make a couple comments. You know, admin administers state contracting law, Chapter 16C, and over the years there's been a number of different provisions that have made it into the regulatory framework of state procurement. And when a business chooses to do business with the state, they have to navigate a 43-page contracting document. And any addition to that is just another consideration for a business, which is a challenging hurdle sometimes for small businesses to overcome. Also, just wanted to generally comment briefly on two different items. So the first is that when we put a prohibition in place for any criteria, it doesn't matter what the criteria. One of the challenges can be that it reduces competition. Naturally, if a business must meet a condition and they don't meet that condition, that business would be not allowed to compete for a state contract. Finally, each time that there's a condition placed on state contract, I did also want to briefly comment that there's an increased risk of bid protest. And by that I mean that firms that have a winning bid, often if a competitor believes that the person who won the bid does not meet state statutory requirements, they'll protest that bid. Competitors frequently keep tabs on their other competitors, and so in order to try to obtain a competitive advantage. And in this particular case, it's a little challenging. In doing a little research about the bill and how it would impact state contracting, I was able to find two different lists of businesses on the internet from other states that have passed this law. Neither of them matched, and I was provided a list by the advocates for the bill, which was more extensive than either of the two other states. In doing a little research, there was one business in particular that indicated that was on one of the lists that when we contacted them, they indicated that they'd never boycotted Israel, and the advocates actually took that name off the list at a later date, which illustrates the complexity of managing a prohibition like this. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll conclude my comments.
Okay. Members, any questions for Mr. Shearer? Representative Omar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the companies that you have in the list that was provided to you, if we were to decide not to accept bid, what kind of implications do you think it would have for the competitiveness of the bids that you currently do with them?
Madam Chair, Representative Omar, at the moment, I believe the list that we have after the removal of the one business, I don't think that there are any current contracts that would be impacted by the list that's been provided to me. That being said, this is sort of an ongoing and dynamic situation. So as the situation changes, you know, that could obviously impact, you know, any number of contracts moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Representative Omar?
Madam Chair, I'm just trying to see if this currently is taking place. Are there any companies that are currently participating in a boycott that are up for a bid or that we are doing contracts with?
Madam Chair, Representative Omar, I'm not aware that that's the case.
Representative Omar?
Thank you, Madam Chair. How do you suppose it would be easy for you to do that investigation to find out if an organization is engaging in a boycott if they don't disclose that to you or if that's not disclosed in their website or in any other way?
Madam Chair, Representative, typically in this situation, what we'll be asked to do is to insert a clause inside of our contract where a business self-certifies. Admin as a department would then not do much in the way of verification unless a bid protest came about, which is the reference, you know, that we were just speaking to. So if a competitor was to challenge a winning bid, then we would have the administrative burden to challenge the veracity of that claim. To determine whether somebody is or is not boycotting Israel. But, you know, on a regular basis, I don't think admin administratively would do much to verify the response of the company that's responding to a state solicitation.
Representative Omar?
Thank you, Madam Chair. What are the foreseeable possibilities of this garnering some lawsuits against the state if we were to allow this bill to go through?
Mr. Scheer?
Madam Chair and Representative Omar, you know, again, if there was a bid protest, it's admin, it has the administrative burden to determine who is on either side of that. I think it's an open question, and I don't know the answer to that, whether or not the state would be open to a lawsuit depending on admin's determination of the veracity of that claim. I really would have a tough time answering that question. I don't know if it could be adjudicated or not.
Representative Omar?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Mr. Scheer, I have a question for you, but I do have Representative Flanagan and Johnson. Do you have a question for Mr. Scheer, or is it for the author?
For the author.
For the author. For the author. Okay. Okay. Well, Mr. Scheer, I looked at the fiscal note, members. That's part of your packet here today, and you've got a fiscal note for the bill for a 0.04 FTE. And can you tell me kind of how you arrived at that in greater detail? And the reason why I asked that question is I've looked at past fiscal notes. For one, we've discussed this issue in many different ways here at the legislature. I know Representative Rukavina and Representative Carly Moline have introduced legislation to have only our contract work being done on Made in America contracts. So we've done that. There was no fiscal cost from the Department of Administration on that bill. There's other legislation as well. One more recent, another recent one is the WISA bill that we had. No fiscal note on that one either. Can you tell me why this one is unique and has a fiscal cost when those are clearly along the same lines?
Madam Chair, with respect to the other pieces of legislation. All of those predate me, so I don't think I'd be able to comment in particular on why there would or would not be costs, and I haven't reviewed those fiscal notes. With respect to this fiscal note, I believe the assumptions of the agency were that we were planning on having our staff set up the program, but then also we account for a certain amount of time being spent, again, looking into the veracity of any claims that any other contractors might come forward with.
Okay. Well, Mr. Scheer, I think we'll have to bring this issue back up again. I know Representative Vogel has a piece of legislation on fiscal notes. Mm-hmm. We'll probably be discussing this again at that point, given there's such a difference between the three different bills. But appreciate that. With that, thank you, Mr. Scheer. Representative Krisha, do you want to comment now, or do you want to wait until after you have questions from Representative Flanagan?
I'll take questions and then a couple comments, Dana, if I could, Madam Chair.
Sure. Representative Flanagan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Krisha, I appreciate the language change that you made from to discriminate of Israel, from boycott of Israel. I also think that, there are several folks in this, committee, but also in this body who are against discrimination of any kind. And I'm wondering, would you support language in other bills that would target discriminatory practices based on gender, race, religion, national origin, marital status, disability, or sexual orientation?
Representative Krisha, is that part of your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is not part of my bill. Just a quick comment. I know Representative Hornstein has come to me with a bill that broadens it. We've been trying to work with all the parties, so this one has gotten to the third committee stop, so I'm happy to have those conversations.
Representative Flanagan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No further questions.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Krisha. A couple comments, I guess. First of all, I have serious concerns about the constitutionality of the bill we have before us, and with respect to the First Amendment, the 14th Amendment. I know we had testimony from Mr. Roberts that he's working with the ACLU on this, but I've been around here long enough to know that talking about something is a lot different from actually coming forward with language that meets the standard of what needs to be met. So as far as I'm concerned, it still presents some serious constitutional issues in that regard. And a couple other problems I have is that although this is an important issue, clearly, it just seems to me it belongs in terms of legislative efforts on the national stage. And I know you're not on the Foreign Relations Committee here at the legislature, and it just seems like that is where this type of effort should begin. And then lastly, I'll note that the bill itself doesn't have much to back it up with or much teeth to it, with that new, I think, change where the commissioner can waive application if they determine that compliance is not practical or in the best interest of the state. And again, just based on my experience here working in other committees and over the years, when I see a bill that comes through that doesn't have much actual zip behind it or enforcement behind it, it's often more of a political gesture than it is anything that's really moving forward, any practical legislative thing to make the state a better place to operate. And quite frankly, that's my sense with this particular initiative, that it has much more a political tenor than anything that's practical that's going to do anything good for the state of Minnesota. So those are just some of the concerns I have about this legislation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Krisha, I'm going to move the A2 amendment. Members, this addresses the fiscal note that the Department of Administration put forward and has them take care of this through their own existing appropriations. Any questions to the A2 amendment? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like to oppose, recommend opposition to this particular amendment. I've seen your state government omnibus finance bills in the past, and they have entailed significant cuts required for staff throughout the different agencies, Department of Administration being one of those, and promoting more costs to these departments while at the same time reducing staff is just poor policy, and to move forward in that direction is a bad idea. So I strongly recommend a no vote on this amendment.
Okay. And is there anybody that wishes to testify on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
A2 amendment is adopted. Members, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 400 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Acrecia, any last comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a couple that I'll raise. To the constitutionality.
I'm going to pause you there. I apologize. I didn't see the end piece. So I have a couple other folks that wish to ask questions. I'm sorry. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just also wanted to just echo Representative Flanagan's point. We're going to vote on this, and I just want to say that discrimination, and I support that we look thoughtfully at how we handle discrimination, and I think I will be supporting Representative Hornstein's bill, and I'm glad to hear that you're in conversation about that, because I think if we're going to, especially with the idea that we're talking about spending money, with the idea of it, that we should be more thoughtful about how we handle what when we talk about discrimination and what we're doing there. So I just wanted to note that and note the piece about that we're willing to, we've had a lot of conversations about money in this, as we should, and oversight and whatnot, that this does have a fiscal note tied to it, regardless of where we put this. And so I just want to say that I will be not supporting this because of what Frank Hornstein, Representative Hornstein, will be bringing forward, as well as the cost implications getting put onto a department that we have oversight of here.
Okay. Representative Pugh, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just would like to call for a roll call vote, please.
Representative Pugh calls for a roll call, if the staff will be prepared. But before we do that, Representative Acrecia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I have a lot of comments.
Are you sure?
I do, and I'm gonna set those aside for a second. If you go back to the history of what has happened here, I think there's a great lesson. And I think it's been very clear that a two-state solution is agreed upon by most people as the best way to go. You can go back and argue about how that has come about, but many, many times the two sides have come together to try to get to agreement. That has not happened. This, in Minnesota, is simply an issue of not subsidizing that and getting into the fight. The state of Minnesota should not be part of that. Should just stay, remain silent. We don't discriminate in contracts. If you want to say this is unconstitutional on the First Amendment, I will submit to you that if you want to be anti-Israeli and if you want to be anti-anything before this bill, you're going to be able to be anti that after this bill. There are zero constitutionality on this. If you want to be outspoken against this, you can go right ahead. You just cannot get state dollars to subsidize those efforts. Just as we've done, and those of you that know I was here in 2014 and crossed party lines to help with the WISA and the discrimination, please examine your conscience and don't walk over the hypocrite soldiers to get to the moral high ground. When this is a bill about letting the two sides come together, it has come from the federal government. President Barack Obama has suggested that states do this. Then candidate and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has said, and I quote, the BDS movement seeks to punish Israel and dictate how the Israelis and Palestinians should resolve the core issues of their conflict, and has suggested that states take action as well. This has been done in 16 other states, and that's simply all this bill does. With that, I would ask for your vote, Madam Chair and members.
Okay, thank you, Representative Acrecia. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Anderson?
Aye.
Rep Nash?
Aye.
Rep Johnson?
No.
Rep Detmer?
Yes.
Rep Fenton?
Yes.
Rep Flanagan?
No.
Rep Green?
Yes.
Rep Kunesh-Podein?
No.
Rep Lilly?
Yes.
Rep O'Driscoll?
Yes.
Rep Olson?
No.
Rep Omar?
No.
Rep Pugh?
Yes.
Rep Quam?
Yes.
Rep Uglum?
Yes.
Rep Vogel?
Yes.
Rep Ward? Representative Lilly?
On a vote of 10 yes and 6 no, the bill passes and gets referred to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Cresha. Members, with that,
thank
we
you, Madam
are
Chair, members.
Adjourned.